Heading.
Tim, would you like for people to email you during the program, or would you like to be left alone?
Oh, they can email me, but I'm not sure if I have an email
address. I think you're Tim at 970.am?
I might be.
He is.
Oh, all right.
That's what I am.
There we go.
Plugged in as always.
There you go.
It's Sarah and or Tim at 970.am. Me, myself, though, it's Rick at rickemerson.com. I'll tell you that. 503-733-2970 for your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your whatnot. I know the phrase whatnot is supposed to be stricken. I know Dynamike, they got a whole thing about it now. But I've been saying whatnot. Saying whatnot is my little tribute to Billy Ray Valentine, so I will continue to do so.
What was I talking about?
Well, I don't really know. It is Monday, and welcome to day 12. People already calling about some things that we're going to do. We are going to talk Sopranos, so yes, if you are calling about the Sopranos, we'll do a little Sopranos talk right here in the beginning of the show, and then later on we'll revisit that with everybody's favorite guest, Peter Carlin. That'll be around 2 o'clock today, I believe. Oregonian TV critic and professional commenter, Peter Carlin, will be joining us. What else do we have today? CNN radio correspondent Amanda Moyer. Wait, hold on. Moyer.
I barely knew her.
She'll be joining us today from, I think she's in Atlanta, or Hotlanta, as the kids call it. She'll be there talking about gas prices. I don't really care about gas prices, but I do care about this, even though it's like a week after the fact. This idiot, don't... I swear to God, next year at this time, if people are sending me this don't buy gas thing, I'm going to come to your house and I'm going to punch out your teeth. Just stop it. Did you hear any news about the don't buy gas day and how it affected... No, you know why? It doesn't affect anything. Doesn't affect anything. Idiots. So, anyway, so we're going to have her on. She's going to talk about... She thinks she's coming on to talk about today's gas prices. She's really not. She's going to come on, and I'm going to make her talk about last week's retarded Don't Buy Gas Day. Just in the hopes of... Which is probably futile, but in the hopes of forestalling a bunch of moronic emails to go around next year.
Oh, my gas!
As though buying gas the day before or the day after is somehow better. Anyway... So we'll talk to Amanda Moyer. We will talk to CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. We'll find out if her weekend was restful and relaxing. And by the way, I didn't do this to be a stalker, but I did check out that, the page she's got with her fiancé, Jason. And there's that whole guestbook thing. It is simultaneously sort of great and just sort of sad that about two-thirds of the comments in her guestbook now are from listeners of this program. People she doesn't know, people who've never met her, people she wouldn't recognize if they were in the same room with her. You know, because there's a couple sort of, hello, this is Aunt Cherise, and I just want to say that we're looking forward to your impending nuptials. And then it's a whole lot of, like, you rock, LOL, 111, 11T, XR, 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 you know. A whole bunch of idiot audience members filling her pager with geek speak. So there's that. Anyway, so we'll talk to Lisa Goddard later on about this stupid immigration debacle, which is just continues to just talk about an exercise of just futility and angst. All right. What else? Well, some good news. Dr. Laura continues to generate comedy for us, this time in the person of her 21-year-old son, allegedly. I don't have anybody. I don't know if y'all are Dr. Laura listeners or used to be listeners to Dr. Laura. She used to be her kid's mom. That used to be how she identified herself. But now she is no longer her kid's mom. She is, wait, where is it here? She is the proud mother of a deployed American paratrooper who is under investigation for running a webpage filled with images of rape, murder, torture, and child molestation. Well done, Dr. Laura. Way to raise a child. Fantastic. We all salute you. I don't know if I showed this at the listener party, or not, listener party 10. I have that photograph of Dr. Laura sitting in my lap. I don't know if I had that on display, though.
No, you didn't.
All right, I have a photo of Dr. Laura sitting on my lap. The actual real Dr. Laura sitting on the lap of me, the actual Rick Emerson. Many years ago when I had long, unkempt hair. Maybe I'll find that. I'll stick it up on the website. It is pretty great. Boy, talking just a mean, repulsive woman. Just a tiny little... And just... I mean, and she was like... I don't know. She was like made out of chicken bones and leaves. I mean, it's like she weighed about 40 pounds. But not like in the hot, really slender way, but sort of in the I'm a walking corpse kind of a way. Anyway, I'll try to find that photograph. We'll get it scanned and put up on the website. All right, Dr. Laura News today. Peter Carlin, Amanda Moyer, Lisa Goddard. What is exploding casket syndrome? If you've been dying to know, we'll answer that question right around the lunchtime section of the day today. It is 503-733-2970. 800-282-970. We've also got, I will try to get to this second worst story in the history of the world today. Scotty J is welcome back to the program today. He was gone Friday, so he joins us again today. I might inflict another sort of ad hoc top five on him and see if he can get that together. Pardon me? Am I going to belch? No. No, I'm not. No, the belch has been forestalled. 503-733-2970. You can also email it as rick@rickemerson.com. We'll do introductions and a look ahead at the news here in just a second. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you today?
Yeah, Rick, I understand that some steel industry advocacy group has given the tram an award this weekend. But it's actually being awarded to the Pill Hill Area Rapid Transit. Our question is, is the FCC going to allow you to use an acronym for that?
Okay, let's stop and let's do this whole phone call again from the beginning. Hello?
Yes.
Okay, let's do this whole phone call again from the beginning. Hi. Now let's take this line
morning,
by
Rick.
Yeah, let's do this line by line. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
You're not okay, now you're doing a different phone call, but that's okay. I'm fine. What's up?
Okay, I understand that this weekend, a steel industry group has given the tram an award.
First of all, let's take this one sentence at a time. Are you making this up?
No, I heard this on another news program this morning.
There is no other news program, sir. You heard this on another radio program that purports to be news, but in reality is simply a pack of lies and manifest irresponsibilities.
Then I apologize.
Okay, thank you. Secondly, is tram an acronym or abbreviation for something?
I'm not sure myself.
What does tram mean? Is tram a word in and of itself, like train?
I believe so.
Tram sounds like, I mean, what does the word tram even mean? Where does that even come from? Somebody else will find out. But just as you say the word tram, I start to think about tram. Doesn't tram sound like it ought to be an abbreviation of something?
It does.
All right. Okay, what is your next... Okay, so there's a steel industry group that is giving an award to the tram, which goes right above Clyde Lewis's house. They are giving it an award. Why?
Well, because it's the use of steel in for the towers and whatnot. It's a construction thing. Promoting this kind of use of steel.
Okay, that doesn't make any sense. They're getting an award for using steel in construction and whatnot.
Correct.
I suspect that's not the actual specific verbiage of the award. But all right, okay. So what is the zinger here? What is your final question?
Well, I understood that the official recipient of the award was the Pill Hill Area Rapid Transit.
FARC.
No, Rapid Transit.
Oh, PHART. Oh,
so will the FCC allow broadcasters to use the acronym for that in their news stories?
I don't know. They'll probably alter the acronym the way they sometimes do. I can't think of an example right now, but there are the acronyms sometimes that are altered by newscasters just so that they can be said on the public airwaves. I can't really think of an example right now, but that does happen sometimes.
Right.
Is that the entire purpose of your call?
Yeah, and of course it goes along with your upcoming things about the gas prices and your attempt not to belch. You know, it's a kind of a...
It's a whole gas-oriented day.
Yeah. The whole show is a gas, Rick. It always is.
Okay. Thank you. The use of our precious airwaves right there. That's a...
Good thing you took that call before introduction.
Yeah. That was really important. That's exactly what Nikola Tesla envisioned when he created radio. He envisioned Cecil being able to call up and talk about flatulence in a sort of passive, backhanded kind of way. All right, it's 503-733-2970. We'll talk Sopranos in a few. We'll do a couple news stories here at the top before we do anything else. We are joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm dandy. You know why?
Why?
Because I once again bicycled today. That's
what
right.
You?
In your face, you sons of bitches.
I didn't.
I know you didn't. Something in your eye?
No, there's something going on with my eye.
You want to hear the story about a woman who had a bug inside of her eye, which then filled with pus? Not the bug, but the eye?
No.
Okay, I'll read it to you later. You might have that, though. She said that she said she kept feeling like she had an eyelash or something poking into her eye.
She did not.
She did. And it wasn't so much an eyelash as it was a virus that was filling the inside of her eyeball with pus. There's a great picture of her at the doctor with the eyeball bulging out of the socket.
Okay.
I think they had to lance it at some point.
It's not bothering me that much.
Well, not yet.
Little...
No, I mean, be, you know, tomorrow. All right. So, just by the way, for those who are keeping track, I did, in fact, buy the bicycle today. So that is another $29 on the pile, you bastards. So there you go.
And then I didn't bicycle and
okay.
Children
no,
and
no, no,
suffer at all.
It's fine. You know what? It's all right. Doesn't matter. It's not the children who suffer, Sarah.
It doesn't. Well, you and I leave the house at separate times, and I can't help it that it was raining by the time I left my house.
Raining when I left the house earlier.
It was not.
It was. It was raining, and it was cold.
It was sunny.
No, it was not.
Well,
it was
good.
Grim.
Well, at least all that rain gear that you bought a few months ago is finally getting put to good use.
Don't listen. You don't project your anger onto me.
I'm not angry. I rode my bike all weekend long. I don't feel any guilt about not riding
it
today.
You're a little bit of peevishness creeping into your voice. That's all I'm
no,
saying.
No, because you're very annoying, because I've been riding mine for like a year solid, and you've ridden for a week, and you're getting this haughty, oh, you didn't ride your bike today. I can't believe you didn't ride your bike.
It's true. It's the greatest thing. Like, I can be smug to the power of three now.
But you really can't.
I can be smug in like three or four different ways. With every passing day, I can be more and more self-satisfied. It really is great. But back real quickly on the subject of the tram. My only question about the tram is, first of all, well, I'll get to the tram in a second. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, there's been a report of an explosion and fire near Banks. A student is stabbed in the back at Roosevelt High, and the stabber is quickly apprehended. Jimmy Carter admits his comments about the president may have been careless and misinterpreted. And Oregon faces a severe chicken manure shortage.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's all get on that. Real quickly, I'm just going to make this observation about the tram, then we'll do a few other things. It's 503-733-2970. I mean, two things about the tram. So my wife rode the tram, I think, for the first time, I don't know, about it, last week, 79 days ago, something like that. And she sent me some pictures from the tram, which is freaky, by the way. She was showing me, it's not like I was on it, but she sent me some pictures from her cell phone. You're way up there. I mean, even if you're not way up there, it certainly seems like you are. I mean, that's like on a clear day, you can see forever kind of stuff. The guys who ran the tram, though, said that they have to close. Did you know that they close the tram anytime there's wind above, I don't know, I think it's like 9 miles an hour, something like that? Anytime, which she said it's, and it's not that the tram can't handle the wind. Apparently, the wind doesn't really have any effect on the tram. It's just that it makes people, quote, really unnerved. So they have to, which is the same thing as saying the tram can't run in the wind. It just, the whole thing just seems like a colossal boondoggle. I mean, I don't know how much money that they spend building that thing. I guess my question is, since it really only serves people who are working up on the hill, why can't they all just take the freaking bus? I mean, really, it's not like they're building a tram just for people who live in St. John's. I mean, they're building a tram for the population of the VA and of OHSU, which is, I don't know, like 1/10,000th the population of Oregon. So, I mean, just get on the goddamn bus like everybody else. Seriously. All right, let's talk Sopranos. Sopranos was great last night. Wasn't really helped by the fact that my cable kept screwing up, though. The cable was doing that thing where it was pixelating. Like, it would go to, and it was always at some climactic scene, too. I would be watching, and then suddenly there's Tony sitting down with Phil Leotardo, and they're talking about, I don't know, whatever, Tony's take of that asbestos operation they've got going. And suddenly Tony, and you can tell when Tony's going to get really angry, because he does that thing where he starts breathing through his nose a lot, and he starts doing the Bill Clinton gesture where he puts his thumb and his pointer and middle finger together. And he does a lot of this kind of breathing. He does a lot of... And you can tell that's when Tony's about to lose it. And so right as he's doing that with Phil Leotardo yesterday, the screen just goes... And it just goes all pixelated on me, and then I lose the sound for... And AJ tried to kill himself. The picture went all bad for me again last night, so I missed part of that. Enough to see, though, that they're really... I was talking to somebody about this last night, that they're really overwriting the character of AJ Soprano. Like, and here's the thing, they only got two episodes left to wrap that whole series up. So I don't care if the next two episodes are the most brilliant thing in the history of television. They've really mangled The Sopranos the last season and a half or so in a few ways. They've just completely lost the thread with some of those characters. They have no... the thing with AJ Soprano, in my opinion, is that they just... For the longest time, he was just like a little bastard. Like, he was just a little hoodlum and a thug and just a layabout and a ne'er-do-well and didn't know what to do. And he was just sat around and got high and did a whole lot of nothing. He was just a slug. But once they got him out of that mode, once they got A.J. Soprano out of the just-being-a-teenage-juvenile-delinquent-lump mode, and they tried to give him any sort of layers and depth, they just blundered spectacularly. They just have no idea what to do with that guy. And so one week, AJ's being a little miniature version of his father. The next week, he's trying to kill himself. It does not make any sense at all. Makes no sense. No freaking sense. So there's that. There's Entourage, which continues to be, I think, probably the best thing on HBO and one of the best things on the air. I would say in terms, and they're running brand new episodes all summer long. This is how great Entourage is. Entourage is great not only in content, but in the way that they're actually running the show. Because this is what we're in the fourth season now. And by my count, they got about three episodes left of this fourth season. And then I think they're only taking like 2 weeks off. And then bam, coming right back with a brand new fifth season. And last night just continued to be... I don't think there's really been a bad episode of that show yet. I mean, some episodes are better than others. But pound for pound, I would say for my money, Entourage is the single most reliable program on the air right now. And I know I'm one of those... I've never seen Heroes, which I know everybody talks about. Let me talk about Heroes for a second, too, because... these are all... I'm stringing these things all together. These are not random thoughts. One thought is very logically leading to another here. Here's the thing about Heroes. It's almost like the universe is bent on making me feel bad for not watching Heroes, because not only does everybody in the audience talk about it, not every magazine article I pick up is about Heroes, but on this radio station, right, I said Dennis Miller, they were doing that tonight. This whole year has come down to 1 hour, blah, 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 and they're doing this three-part season finale, which we run commercials for like 100 times an hour. So I just feel like a complete tool for never having watched the show, but, you know, what are you going to do? Let's see. What else? Well, I guess that's it. Have I talked about exploding casket syndrome? I'll try to do that. Maybe I'll do that.
You mentioned it. Are you going to say what it is?
No, I'll do it right now.
Awesome.
I was gonna make it part of the lunch pile, but I'll do it right now. I'll get a couple of these stories, and then we'll probably break at the bottom of the hour. We're going to. Speaking of which, before we do anything else,
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except
you're not going to amount to jack squat.
Beat up, Scotty.
End this message.
Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, our intrepid PA, Scotty J. Why, hello there.
Good morning.
How are you? How are
you? Doing great.
Oh, boy.
First of all, can I say this? I'm no fat complaint, and I'm no Mr. Blackwell or nothing, but that Tom Petty shirt gets worn like twice a week.
Yeah, it's becoming my favorite shirt. It gets worn at least once a week.
I mean, I didn't want to make any observations about that because, again, I'm really no one to. I live in a fashion glass house. I am no one to throw any kind of clothing stone.
I'm down to like five business shirts for the radio show.
I'm just
this
making the observation. You start to wear that much more. I mean, if you were to, it's this dark brown USA Tour 2006 Tom Petty and the
Heartbreaker
shirt.
Really, I never see him wear that.
Like once a week.
He wears that the gray mesh one.
Yeah.
And at least twice a week.
And here's the thing.
twice a week.
If you amp this up much at all, you're really edging into Clyde Lewis territory.
Right, I know. I've been kind of working it.
Next thing you know, there's going to be holes in the armpit. You're going to be continuing to wear it anyway. We're going to be able to...
The funny part is, when I bought it at the concert, I didn't really like it because I liked the other shirt that said, oh my my, or oh hell yeah.
Well, I'm glad you like it enough that you're able to wear it repeatedly. You do wash it between wearings, don't you?
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. Look, we've worked together for a little while now, and I've smelled some of the odors that come...
What did you say, Scotty?
It starts fading. Yeah, you don't want to fade Tom out of the
shirt.
You want to keep that shirt cherry.
It'll stand on its own in a corner.
Okay, that's funny. I've told the story before, though, about my ninth grade biology teacher, who told us quite seriously that he never bathed, because there had always been that rumor. Oh, you know, Mr. So-and-so doesn't take baths. And I always thought it was like an urban legend, one of those things you hear about, like, so-and-so, I thought it was a Jamie Lee Curtis type thing. You know, just an urban legend that gets passed around. But somebody actually, some wiseacre, actually raised their hand in class one time because this biology teacher said, and so does anybody, and he sounded just like Mr. Van Driesen from Beavis and Butthead. So, does anybody have any questions about anything today? And some ass The type of kid in class who always raises his hand and asks stupid questions. Just raised his hand and said, I heard that you don't take showers. And he explained to us quite seriously, I mean, to my face, he explained to us that he didn't bathe because the body created natural oils and it cleaned itself. So, apparently your shirt does the same.
God, he's encrusted in with natural oils.
That's disgusting, even to me.
He's infused. All right. Hey, so we've had some emails about this guy who called us a few weeks ago and said that his summertime project was he was quitting his job and he and his deaf girlfriend and their one-year-old kid were going to be traveling across country in their car. No real plans, no real goals. I swear to God, this is what he said. He had been saving a drawer full of cash, not in a bank, actually in a drawer, and that he and his deaf girlfriend and their one-year-old kid were going to be just taking this gigantic American road trip. And so that was happening in the first week of June, so we're kind of getting up on it. Do we have his contact info?
Yes, I left a message for World Traveler Nate.
Is his name Nate? Okay. So let me know if you hear back from him, because okay. I would like to talk to him.
And Carlin's a go for
at
Peter
at 2
Carlin.
O'clock? Fantastic. Excellent. So let me know if you hear from the road trip guy.
All right.
Because I'd like to kind of find out what his deal is.
Okay.
All right. Scotty J, before you leave. So we had such roaring success the other day with the Scotty J ad hoc top five.
Oh, no.
Then what we're going to do is we're going to play this game once again. Because, see, I'm still, even at this point, I'm so overjoyed with the fact that the phones work correctly.
Is the top five becoming a crutch on this show?
No, the top five, it's the opposite of that, actually.
We've had like three top fives in the past 2 years.
I am proud of this.
No, it's
you have got to all of them in the last
that's
couple
what I'm
weeks.
Saying. You're not a long-time member of the Rick Emerson Show.
No, I'm not.
You don't remember the way it used to be.
No, I don't. There was
a time when the top five was a regular feature. That was gotten to regularly.
Wow. Like a top five every day?
It has become the opposite of a recurring bit. It's become a thing that I almost never get done. And I have to tell you, just all kidding aside, it's actually really nice to have it back and to have it happening again.
I like it.
I think I was just kind of getting burned out on doing it myself, and it's like the same. I think I just exhausted in my head the type of list to do. I think I'd just gone through every single top five I could conceivably think of. Even after having been fired for a year, even after we came back, after having been off the air for almost 12 months.
Were you thinking to yourself, when you were fired, I know I'm going to do a top five again someday, so I better write this down.
Well, because there was like a 2-week period between when we got hired and when we came back on the air. And in that 2 weeks, I tried to brainstorm as many top fives as I could for the new version of the show. And I think I only got like 3 done.
Oh.
And I just ran out of ideas. I just had nothing. So what we'll do now, and I will auto-hold these phones, Scotty. You could just hang out in here. We will now take your suggestions at 503-733-2970 for a top five, which Scotty J will then have prepared by, I would say, 2 o'clock today.
Oh.
It is 503
the pressure.
733-2970.
You do well under
pressure, Scotty J. 503-733-2970. Pleased to be calling now with your suggestions for top fives that Scotty J must then have assembled sometime in the next 2.5 hours. It's 503-733-2970, and we'll just take those on screen here in a second. But first, I'm going to read this story. This is a little tease from something I call the Rick Emerson Lunchtime News Stack. Leaking mausoleum mystery solved. This is from Sacramento. The mausoleum mystery has been solved. We know now that a dark liquid at a crypt has been leaking from a corpse. This is by Mike Strito in Sacramento. A disturbing possibility. Decomposing bodies build up gas. It has nowhere to go. You're going to see what may have happened over 12 years in 3 seconds. Oh, apparently this is the transcript of a TV news story. It's called exploding casket syndrome, a phenomenon so rare that most morticians have only heard of it. And that's what may have happened at the Sierra View Cemetery in Olivehurst. You know, the really unfortunate thing as I read this now is that apparently this is a transcript of a television news story, and apparently there are visuals that go along with this. Apparently, recently, a corpse continued to expand at the funeral home until it, quote, exploded the casket, leaking a thick, viscous liquid all over the floor. Kevin Flanagan from the Department of Consumer Affairs says, decomposition is not a pretty sight. We're looking into why the casket was so shoddily constructed. After seeing stories earlier this week, the State Cemetery and Funeral Bureau inspected Sierra View. Cemetery workers cleaned the vault, covered the casket with plastic, and resealed the crypt with caulk. Flanagan says, it was apparently really ugly in there. People were slipping on the floor.
Hey, I was under the impression that they removed vital organs, and then the only thing remaining was embalming fluid. So
you still got skin. Your skin stays there. I mean, for a while anyway. Then it apparently starts staining the floor and people slip in it. All right, we'll just take a few of these. It's 503-733-2970. Why, hello there. How are you today?
I am fine, and how are you, sir?
I am dandy. All right, do you have a suggested top five for Scotty J?
I don't think he knows much about the Beastie Boys. I was going to see if he could do that.
Is this
just do pure Beastie Boys?
So yeah. Now, do you have a reason for this, or is it just because you like the idea of stumping Scotty with the top five?
That's pretty much it.
All right, hold on. Top five Beastie Boys. They were just here doing that secret show for Wyden Kennedy. Beastie.
Yeah, that's what I heard. But you can't get in there much as Sarah.
All right.
All right, guys.
Excellent.
Bye.
Thank you. There you go. Thank you, sir. It's 503-733-2970. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Do you have a top five that Scotty J should be assembling today?
Good morning, sir. Yes, I do. And what are they going to reseal that casket with, Rick?
With caulk, sir.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, thank you.
Top five. He should do a top five on the top five songs that Road Trip Nate White will want to listen to.
All right. Road Trip Nate or his wife?
His wife.
So top five Road Trip songs. Top five female Road Trip songs. Top five female Road Trip songs.
White will want to listen to.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Goodbye.
All right, there you go. Well, you had talked the other day about doing top five Road Trip songs.
Right, but that's tough. I don't know what she listens to.
Well, I'm just saying, this is what, Scotty, they can't all be easy. This is what, you got it.
I want to make something clear. I'm limited to what I have, so sometimes I wish
don't
I had
Don't stop making excuses.
No, I wish I had a certain Beastie Boys song, for instance.
Don't preemptively justify your failure.
Okay.
Still a couple more, and then we got a break. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Do you have a top five suggestion for Scotty J?
Yes, I was thinking maybe the top five information gathering type songs, since Scotty's lamenting the fact that he missed out on the Mary Last Chance with Mary Jane shirt.
Oh, I see. These would be the top five songs regarding
information.
The pot.
Yes.
Yes. All right, Scotty, do you feel you could assemble top five songs regarding the pot?
I have an idea, yeah.
All right, okay, excellent.
Maybe.
All right, thank you, sir. Are you informed as we speak, sir?
I'm planning on it.
All right, excellent. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Have a great, productive afternoon. Fantastic. All right, last call. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Well, that was certainly easy. All right. Thank you, Scotty.
Yeah.
All right. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Last story, and then we'll take a break. We'll come back. Amanda Moyer around the corner and some other things to get you. This is from, this is from the Salt Lake Tribune. The soldier son of talk radio relationship counselor Dr. Laura Schlesinger is under investigation for a graphic webpage that one Army official has titled Repulsive. The MySpace page, publicly available until Friday. This is the most depressing thing, by the way. When there's some exciting MySpace page in the news, and then they take it away, and you have to find some cached version of it, and you can no longer read like half the crap. The MySpace page, publicly available until Friday when it disappeared from the Internet, included cartoon depictions of rape, murder, torture, and child molestation. Really, it's not just the fact that it's depictions of those things. It's actually that one was able to seek out and or create cartoon depictions of rape and child molestation.
Oh, my God.
Photographs of soldiers with guns in their mouths and a photograph of a bound and blindfolded Guantanamo detainee, accounts of illicit drug use, and a blog entry headlined by a series of obscenities and racial epithets. The site is credited to and includes many photographs of Derek Schlesinger, the 21-year-old son of the talk radio personality known simply as Dr. Laura. This makes me feel really old, by the way, because, God, I remember when I started listening to the Dr. Laura show, back when I used to carry her on the station that I worked at. She was like 9 years old. It's like when I get those phone calls from people who listen to me all the way through high school. He's apparently under investigation. Since Derek Schlesinger deployed earlier this year, his mother's talk show increasingly has been focused on the bat. By the way, Dr. Laura repeatedly during her radio program talks about how she stayed at home with him when she wasn't doing the radio show because she wanted him to grow to be normal and well-balanced with a healthy set of virtues and morals. So there you go. We'll post a link to this on the webpage at rickemerson.com. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. Amanda Moyer coming up later on. Tim Riley at noon with the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Lisa Goddard, the top five, Peter Carlin, etc. You stay there. It's Monday on the Rick Emerson Show. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up, just for you, CNN radio correspondent Amanda Moyer from Atlanta. Later on, we have AM 970 Noon News Hour. We have Tim Riley. We have the top five coming up with Scotty J. I think what we decided, I was going through some of the emails during the break. I think Scotty's going to be assembling, what is it? Yes, that's right. Yeah, the top five, Scotty J's top five radio tune-outs. This is the top five songs that make Scotty J turn the dial. And, I mean, you have heard his music, so it's all one can only imagine.
We'll probably love all of the songs.
Probably. If it's not Baker Street, he's not listening. 503-733-2970. We'll get to this news pile here in a second before we talk to Amanda. This is Anthony. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
And, hey, Rick, listen. You got to give kudos to the one caller who called up because neither you nor Scotty J caught it, but he said the top five songs that Cross Country Nate's wife would listen to.
Yes.
Cross Country Nate's wife is deaf.
Oh, that's right. So she'll be listening to nothing.
Exactly.
I hadn't really put that together. Well spotted, sir.
Thank you.
Boy, am I glad. Here's the thing. We got a hold of Nate during the break, and I think we don't have time to talk to him now, but I think we're going to be talking to him around 1:30 or so. I'm really glad you pointed that out before we had him on the phone later, because I might have just walked right into that. I might have just stepped right into that propeller and mentioned something about it without having it brought to my attention. And that would have been awkward to the power of 10, sir.
Actually, so, it would have been even better.
Yeah, yes, I'm here to amuse. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. Okay.
Yeah, that would have been really awkward.
Mm. What?
I am not playing these reindeer games with you.
Come on! All right. It's 503. See, Scotty found that funny. 503-733-2970 is the Rick Emerson radio program. Hey, can you sweeten my mic just a hair there? Thank you so much. I didn't... I forgot to survey Tim to see what sort of disgusting human leavings were left on his keyboard over the weekend. So we'll have to do that when he gets back in here. I'm going to do a couple of these stories here as we approach the noontime hours. We approach the lunch segment of today's program. Then we got CNN radio correspondent Amanda Moyer coming up. Lisa Goddard around 1 o'clock. Peter Carlin at 2. Tim Riley at noon, etc. We'll talk to Cross Country Nate around 1:30. This is a smattering of stories so wonderful and vile that they could only be placed here immediately preceding the lunchtime segment of today's programming. We have this first from Fox 12. This is in Cincinnati. A Cincinnati area family got a smelly surprise when they opened a punching bag they purchased earlier this year. Joe Heckel said he and his son were moving a TKO brand heavy punching bag from their garage to the basement when they decided to see what was inside in case the bag later leaked. But Heckel said instead of sand or plastic pellets, what do you suppose, Sarah, was inside this punching bag? This is sort of, you know, a heavy bag with the kind that hangs from the ceiling, the big chained up kind like Rocky trains on. What do you suppose is in a punch? Let me ask you this. What do you suppose is supposed to be inside a punching bag?
Like little styrofoam balls?
I believe it is, in fact, sand.
No, styrofoam balls would be too light.
I think
light.
Sand mixed with a sort of polymer.
I don't even want to guess.
What do you imagine was inside this?
I don't know.
Heckel said instead of sand or plastic pellets, he found a bag full of used underwear. He said there were bras, thongs, and bathing suits. All of them apparently used, and some...
Don't say it.
Stained. He said, we had a hard time believing it. The smell was, quote, bad. Real bad. He said, I found it really gross, to be honest. Heckle said Thursday that a representative from the company had told him the underwear in the bag was a quality problem that they were dealing with, and that the people who made the decision to put underwear in the bags had been fired. TKO representative said a new non-underwear filled bag would be shipped to Heckle shortly. Well, that's nice of him. My question is, first of all, A, really my only question is, no, that's not true. I take it back. I have two questions, then we'll talk to Amanda Moyer. A, if you're working on the assembly line at TKO and you're filling these bags with things, why would it occur to you to use underwear instead of, I mean, if you're working at the factory, presumably they give you stuff to fill the bag. Like, it's not like they just give you the empty bag at the factory and say, well, you're responsible for getting it filled. Go. I mean, presumably, if you're working on the assembly line, there's a machine that opens the bag, there's a machine that fills the bag, there's a machine that closes the bag. It seems like you really got to go out of your way to fill it with something other than the intended product. Secondly, why underwear? And thirdly, where are the underwear from? I mean, you got
to... Especially enough to fill a punching bag.
That's what I'm saying. You got to surreptitiously be bringing a lot of underwear in there. Do I have time for one more?
No.
Not even this one about a world breastfeeding record? All right, man. Though, well, that'll have to suffice for now. We'll try to do some around the corner. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the CNN Radio Center in Atlanta, Amanda Moyer, joining us now in the Rick Emerson program. Why, hello, Amanda, and how is your Monday?
Hello, and my Monday is going okay.
Is it going? Where would you rank it on the classic 1 to 10 scale, Amanda?
Oh, I think I'd put it as a 7.
A 7. All right.
Yeah, nothing bad happened, but, you know, nothing overly good happened either.
All right, so really, you're at a... So 7 is pretty much a baseline for just an average day in the life of Amanda at CNN.
Correct.
All right. Hey, so let's talk for a second about gasoline. And before we... And I typically... You should know just a little bit of backstory. I typically don't talk about gas prices or the rising cost of the petrol or whatever. It doesn't really matter to me in the sense that it's not like people are going to stop buying gas. All of this, this rigmarole about it, that people are canceling their cross-country vacations. These are all fabricated stories. Nobody's canceling anything. Americans have no problem going further into consumer debt. The idea that because Americans suddenly can't afford something, they're not going to buy it, is it's what my grandfather would call hooey. So that being said, let's do a little bit of let's jump back about a week and talk about this don't buy gas thing that happened last week. And everybody was convinced, and by everybody, I mean morons, they were convinced that this was somehow going to hit the oil companies in their pocketbook and it was going to have some gigantic effect on the oil industry in this country and gas prices were going to plunge. It seems to me like that was a phenomenally misguided bit of civic activism. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I would have to say so, but... So many people thought that it would work if they just didn't buy gas. I believe it was like a Tuesday. But what they didn't think is you're still going to buy it on Wednesday or you bought it on Monday if you didn't need it Tuesday.
That's what I'm saying. And so are there any figures? I mean, I don't even know where you would get this sort of information. But is there any sort of, I don't know, statistical data to indicate that, first of all, that anybody even did this or didn't do it as the case may be?
Well, I don't know how many people did it, but I did speak to lots of people. I went to commuter lots, I went to the airport, and I asked a lot of people that day, you know, are you going to buy gas? What do you think about this? And I would say 90% of the people that I spoke to said they were going to do it, they weren't going to buy gas, but they didn't think it was going to work, but it made anyway.
And I mean, and it really, I mean, it seems like simple mathematical logic would indicate that this is... That it doesn't have any effect at all. And, of course, a week later it seems to have had. I mean, there's been no stories, no follow-up, no coverage, no nothing. So it seems to have done a whole lot of bupkis.
That's right. And analysts said, I mean, they said they wouldn't do anything. They said, don't listen to this. Don't just avoid the email. It's not going to hurt big oil. But, you know, people just wanted to do it anyway. I guess if that, it makes you feel good in any little bit, you can do, I guess.
All right, let me ask you this. Is there any reason... let me rephrase this question. Is there any sort of a logical, sensible reason that would be simple to understand why gas prices go up? I mean, I know that sounds a little daft of me, but I mean, I really don't get why gas prices can go up 11 cents in the course of like 7 days. It just doesn't make any sense to me. That didn't happen with any other consumer item.
Well, that's true, and... I mean, I can't give you an exact reason, but I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into... the price of gas, and it's not your gas station guy raising it. It's first and foremost, the price of crude oil varies, but also refineries. And there's a lot of refineries that have been out of commission. There's been unplanned disruptions at U.S. refineries, and that's really raising the prices. Some were on performing maintenance, and others had accidents. So it's just really been unfortunate that at the time the crude has been going up. The last couple of days, crude has jumped, I think, $40. So with crude going up, refineries being down, and the summer season's coming. Memorial Day weekend is the beginning of the driving season, so that's not helping either.
So it really isn't, I mean, so you're telling me there's not just some guy spinning a big wheel of prices somewhere, because that is kind of the way it feels like. That's what it feels like most of the time.
It does feel that way.
Yeah. So this is, here's another question. I can never, ever get a straight answer to this, because this all, you know, there's a lot of talk about the American military operations that happen for oil and the fact that we intervene in so many places around the world because of our dependence upon oil and, you know, how that's tied into our gasoline consumption and so forth. What percentage of our oil comes from places outside the continental United States?
I would say the majority comes from other places. I mean, they've been trying to do stuff in, we do stuff in the Gulf and in Alaska. There's the Anwar drilling, and there's other things that we're trying to do, but we're facing opposition. But the majority of our oil comes from overseas.
Would you say it's more than 90%?
No, I don't think I would say that much, but definitely a majority.
All right. So, well, it's good that they've got cheap gas in Iraq, at least 40 cents a gallon the last time I checked, by the way. So there you go. All right.
I didn't want to live there.
All right. Well, do me the tiniest favor. As next May approaches, when you start to hear people, I don't know, rabble-rousing about this nonsense of not buying gas for a day, if somebody starts talking to you about that, you catch somebody forwarding one of those don't buy gas chain mails, do me and everybody else here in Portland a favor and just give that person a good square punch in the jaw for me. That way we won't have to talk about this next year, all right?
All right.
All right, thank you. There you go. CNN radio correspondent Amanda Moyer in Atlanta. She didn't care for my humor at all.
Not so much.
Well, whatever. I don't care.
It's like she's a less...
Yes?
And, she's less enthusiastic and... I don't know.
No,
like Lisa Goddard. You know?
It's
she's
true.
Like Lisa, like they sound similar when they're talking, but she doesn't have the spunk.
No, she doesn't. I don't think she appreciates my urging that she punch people in the face.
No.
And I don't think she liked the fact that I asked her a question about the oil and she didn't have the answer
totally.
To it.
Totally. I don't think she liked that you were trying to pinpoint her down. So the majority, 90%, no, I don't think.
Well, nobody can ever tell me. I'm not trying to be a jerk about it. I just said it's one of those things that frustrates me. Is questions to which there is a concrete answer, but the concrete answer can't ever... I mean, look, there is a number, right? I mean, we here in America use oil, a tremendous amount of oil. We get some of it from, from places here. We get some of it from Texas, for example, and then we get a lot of it from the rest of the world. But there is a number. I don't know what the number is, but there is an answer to that. And there's few things that frustrate me more than questions to which there is a specific, finite, concrete answer, but an answer that I can't ever seem to figure out. This is one of those things, and you know what, and I'll tell you this, I will guarantee you this, and I'm not trying to pick on the audience, but I'm saying even as I ask this question, I know that I'm going to get phone calls or emails from 100 different people, and they're all going to have 100 different answers, and they're all going to point me to web pages that purport to explain the answer, but no two of the answers are ever going to agree. It's kind of a sore spot with me, because it's one of those things that I would like to be able to... It's one thing to say, well, I'm tired of American foreign policy intervening in other countries because we're hooked on their oil supply. And I'm not saying that that's not the case, and I'm not trying to get off in some big political rant here, but I'm just saying, when people talk about, well, I'm tired of us going over and invading countries because we want their oil, I just don't even know how much oil we get from the rest of the world. Like, here's another example. Are we taking oil from Iraq right now? I have no idea.
I know we found all those oil reserves.
Well,
I'm sure that we are.
I mean, they've got oil, but I mean, is some of that oil coming over here? I'm not saying we're entitled to it. I'm just curious. It seems like we're just intervening in Iraq because we want their oil. I don't even really know that we're using oil from Iraq. I'm not trying to pick a fight about it. I just don't know.
I'm sure it's all we probably don't know about it.
The whole thing wouldn't we know about it? I mean, how would they get oil back here? Wouldn't we see it? Don't they bring it over in big oil tankers or whatever?
How much do any of us really know what's going on with the military and what's going on in Iraq?
I know. I understand. I'm not trying to, like, pick a big fight about it. It just bugs me. It just bugs me not knowing stuff. That's my thing.
It bugs me last time I bought gas, it was $2.80, and now it's like $3.80.
See,
it's just ridiculous.
I guess. I mean, it's still cheaper than bottled water. I mean, you know, I guess that's why it doesn't bother me. Lara accuses me of trying to be a contrarian about it. She says that I'm being difficult just for the sake of being difficult, and I'm really not.
That sounds like it.
I'm really not. Gas, though, is still cheaper than most of the stuff your ass buys here as an American. It's cheaper than your drinks at Starbucks.
No, Starbucks, like, latte is, like, $3.
Okay,
it's surpassed that.
You know what? A latte is this big. It's 12 ounces. A gallon of gas is, like, $3-something. So gas is less expensive than your Starbucks beverages. That's my only point. I'm not saying gas isn't expensive.
But it also doesn't take, like, 10 cups of coffee to get going for the day. You have to buy, like, 10 gallons of gas to get, like, what, like, a few miles now before you have to refill again.
Well, I guess some of us need gas to get where we're going in the morning.
Oh, I know your ass was driving around all weekend.
Right there. Yeah, baby.
I drove by your house several times, and your car was always gone.
No, it's true. Yeah. No, I did. I drove everywhere this weekend. No, you're absolutely right. I bicycled all week. I didn't bicycle a goddamn place this last weekend. Not one place. At one point, I had to go to the Plaid Pantry, which is a block away. I drove. I drove and I idled the car outside in the parking lot while I was inside buying some donuts. So in your face.
I know. I rode my bike a lot, but I ate like crap this weekend.
Oh, no, man.
I had so much pizza.
You don't know from crap. Oh. I shoveled crap.
I ate Chinese food, macaroni and cheese, and half a pizza all
in
one day.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
Although today I'm back on the Lara. She didn't make my lunch, but she, because I bring my lunch with me, and I was out of stuff. I was out of fixins, as they say. And so she was going to the store, and she goes, "Do you need anything from the store?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, I'm going to bring some sandwiches to work, and you buy me some sandwich crap." And so she, you know, what she got me? Big thing of tofurkey. So there I am.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm eating Morningstar today.
It's really not good. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
You have to eat tofurkey.
Can I help you?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Rick. I just said, I'm sorry.
No,
about
it's fine.
The oil?
You know, here's the thing is that tofurkey would be okay if it didn't taste like a plunger. I mean, it's just like.
Exactly.
It's like you're eating strips of vulcanized tire. Yeah, what do you got?
I love turkey sandwiches. Tofurkey, not so much.
No, it's terrible. Let's say corn is much better. Go ahead. How can I help you today, my friend?
About the oil, I was going to say, we don't really use any of the oil that we get here. It goes to Korea. Well, so go figure.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would we take oil from Texas and send it to Korea if we're having to import oil from elsewhere?
Well,
that makes
sense
at all.
I'm sure we use some of our oil that we get here, but most of it goes to other countries, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of.
That's so dumb it almost can't be true.
I'm pretty sure some other country is getting ready to start drilling just south of Florida, where we can't drill. It's like 25 miles away.
The whole thing is just so frustrating. All right, thank you, sir.
All right, man. Have a good day.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, avoid tofurkey. I know that the tofurkey company is based here, and the guy, like, listens to our show and whatever, but I'm sorry. The product is just ass.
No, and I spoke before thinking, I don't think I've ever had tofurkey.
No, it's not, like, the worst thing on earth, but corn is way better. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, how can I help you?
Okay, it's Andy. Go ahead.
Oh, wait. Oh, I'm sorry. Wasn't prepared. Well, Andy.
Andy.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. Hey, I was listening to a repeat of John and Jeff last night, and this angered me so much, this argument about the price of, you know, bottled water or gallon of milk or Starbucks. It kept me up literally half. It cost me $104 to fill up my van yesterday. $104. I don't drink $104 worth of Starbucks. I don't drink 40 gallons of milk a day. It's, you know, we have the choice to not buy milk or not buy Starbucks. We don't have a choice to not buy gas. So we're just being held hostage. And that argument just pisses me off.
Well, I would also, now listen, now you all know me. I'm no godless hippie. I don't care. I don't care about the environment or other people. But I will say this, though. I will say this, and we all know that this is the case. Either we live in a city. We are great. We are, unless, now, do you live in Vancouver?
No, I live in Oregon City.
Okay. Well, you live in, okay. Well, certainly, I can't speak for Oregon City, because that's sort of out there in the boondocks. But I will say that certainly in Portland, Oregon, we are graced to have one of the country's finest public transit systems. And as much as we poke fun about taking the MAX, as much as we make fun of the people who ride the bus, as much as Sarah and I give each other crap about bicycling, the fact of the matter is that Tim, for example, takes the MAX every day, because it's a lot more convenient, because you're not having to burn it $4 a gallon. I understand that is not an option for everybody. But I will say, that here in Portland, all of those, that big bite they take out of our asses for taxes every 15 days, that does go to support a public transit system, which is pretty state-of-the-art, my friend.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I do this, this is a company, man, so I don't have to pay for it, so it doesn't piss me off. But the next time, you know, the price of, you know, your canned tuna or, you know, a loaf of bread goes up, you'll know why.
All right, excellent. Thank you.
That's Andy.
Okay. Godlike former program director Bruce Agler. Hello, sir.
Good morning.
What's up?
I understand you wanted some oil consumption figures.
Yes. Good morning, Bruce.
Like Charlie. Hello, angels. Okay, so here. Okay, I have now a couple.
All right.
Questions.
Well, about 60% of the oil, at least in 2005, which last most recent year I can get figures for, was imported.
How sad that you know more than the CNN correspondent who's covering the oil crisis.
Sorry about that. But that other guy was kind of full of it, too. Here in the Northwest, almost all of our oil, I mean, virtually 100% of it comes from Alaska. He is somewhat correct in that at least some of the Alaska oil does actually go to Korea and Japan, which does seem kind of odd. But,
why would
you know, that's
send...
just the way the world markets work, right? We can sell that oil to them, and then that frees up some Arabian oil to go to
any
the
oil. Why would we send any oil from Alaska to Japan if we just have to replace it with oil we purchased from Kuwait? Or
well, it has to do with where we need the oil in this country. We basically use about as much of the Alaskan oil, I guess, as we can use on the West Coast. And it would cost a lot of money to ship it all the way over to the East Coast.
Yeah,
so, you know, it makes more sense to sell some of that to Japan and Korea, and then that frees up some Saudi Arabian oil to go to the East Coast.
All right, my other question is, are we taking oil, to the best of your knowledge, from Iraq? Are we using Iraq?
No, they're not getting enough oil out of the ground in Iraq to meet the needs of Iraq. We are we the American military, are importing oil into Iraq.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
I know, that doesn't make any sense at all. That's how bad we have screwed up things in terms of fixing things in Iraq. I was just hearing this discussed this morning. The oil industry in Iraq is in such a mess. For one thing, all of the people who knew how to run the stuff that Saddam had there, about half of them had left before we got Saddam out of there because Saddam was going crazier and crazier, you know, before the end. And then since we came in, the rest of them have all left. So nobody knows how to work the equipment that's there. All the equipment that we brought in with Halliburton and all those guys, none of it works.
Fantastic.
Well, you know, what did work has been sabotaged by insurgents, and we can't protect the lines.
Well done.
So, I mean, not a lot of oil at all is currently being pumped in Iraq. There is a fair amount, but it doesn't even meet what they need in Iraq. So we have to bring oil in tankers from Saudi Arabia.
Well, that's fantastic.
Oil that otherwise would come here. So
right.
But in the meantime, we still sell it at, what does it say, 25 cents a gallon or something over there.
Yeah, Iraq, the last time I did, their gas is 38 cents a gallon.
So, you know, it's an odd situation. But here in Oregon, almost all of the gasoline you get is refined from oil that's gotten in Alaska, and it's all refined at one of two refineries up in the Anacortes area, you know, up north of Seattle.
Excellent.
Which is what makes the prices here jump around real crazy, because sometimes when there's only the two refineries, so when one of them goes, you know, down for maintenance or something, then that's what'll send the price up wacky here, because all of our gas comes from one place.
All right. Thank you so much for the answer. And there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry.
You can't cut off Bruce.
No, did you have more? No.
Oh, are we back?
Yes. I'm sorry.
I was just doing a silly sign. I do have one more thing. Completely different subject. On the top fives.
Yeah.
You know what I miss? And now this would of course be no challenge for Scotty, but back in the day when we used to do the top five every day, many of them weren't so challenging. They were just simply the top five songs the day graduated from high school and that sort of thing.
A historical top five.
Yeah, I love those. Can't we get back to some of those? Have Scotty do the top five songs?
We should do this.
The day he got married or something?
Top five songs from the day the first Gulf War started.
Hey, yeah, that's cool.
A great idea.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Agnew. Back after this with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth at the AM 970 Noon News Hour. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Hi, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. Just moments away from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Later on, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard will talk to cross-country Nate, traveling the world with his deaf girlfriend. What else? Peter Carlin coming up at 2 o'clock. We'll talk Sopranos and so forth. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, he's your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator. He is the Reverend Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Two men have been hurt after their trailer exploded in Banks. Happened moments ago. This happened on the northwest corner of Cedar Canyon Road. See, if you live in Banks, you must know where it is. It's in rural Washington County.
What just exploded?
A trailer.
Interesting.
Something that people live in that thing.
Not like a horse trailer.
No,
not like a trailer behind a truck, but like a go fetch me my smokes trailer.
Right, like a country music band would live in. Northwest Cedar Canyon Road.
Gonna lose this advertiser.
They may have been welding and hit something that exploded.
Okay.
And then the helicopter came in and took them out.
But we're not making fun of the explosion of trailers, by the way.
No, we're not.
I was referring to the never mind. There was a time, this is a long time ago, this is in the early days of the Portland version of this program. This is back in like 98, 99, when I had apparently made some fun of country music listeners. I had referred to George Jones in particular as being a toothless hillbilly. And I got a very angry letter from an advertiser who said that he would never again spend money on the radio program because I had made fun of the listeners of George Jones and his particular brand of country music.
And in reality, George Jones wore veneers in his mouth.
Is that true?
But everybody in country music does.
I didn't know that. That would actually explain a lot. He does have a weirdly perfect smile.
Yeah.
All right. He's a strange
kind of like Anchorman teeth.
And again, he wears those big, like, rose-colored glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of freaky looking. Kind of like Amber Vision glasses. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, a student was stabbed in the back this morning at Roosevelt High School. The subject was quickly captured. It happened right inside the front door of the school. The suspect was also a student. The school wasn't put into lockdown because these things happen there all the time. Meanwhile, a man in Kaiser was dragged for 7 blocks by a thief attempting to steal his pickup truck. The owner apparently clung to the rear tailgate of his Chevy S10 pickup. It was dragged for 7 blocks by the would-be thief before he stopped and took off on foot. Police used the canine in the search but couldn't find the guy. A drop in the number of poultry farms and higher oil prices are being blamed for a shortage of chicken manure. Some say that's not a bad thing, but it's in demand for fertilizer, and the commercial stuff is getting more expensive for the typical Oregon farmer. When Bruce and Robin Breslov Creswell began raising chickens back in 1980, they were among nearly 20 Lane County chicken ranchers. Now, they are one of three. Once they were trying to give the stuff away, now they can barely meet the demand, despite charging $7.50 per cubic yard of chicken manure. This waste is produced by 700,000 birds they raise every year. That's a lot of chickens.
What's the name of the farmer?
Bruce and Robin Breslaw.
Oh. You know, for a minute, I swear to God, I was preparing this thing. I swear to God, I thought you said Bruce and Robin Creswell.
Oh, they're from Creswell. They live in the town of Creswell.
Well, that's less fun. I'm just going to do...
You will be made fun of by a mid-level radio program.
But see, it doesn't really work now because it's just the name of the... Let's move on. Here's Tim Riley.
So, Jimmy Carter says President Bush's administration is the worst in history in its international relationships.
Bam.
Taking aim at the White House policy of preempted war and its Middle East diplomacy. The criticism from Carter, which a biographer says is unprecedented for the 39th president, also took aim at Bush's environmental policies and the administration's quite disturbing faith-based initiative funding. I think so far... he says, I think as far as the adverse impact of the nation around the world, this administration may be the worst in history. Carter told the Arkansas Democrat Gazette in a story that appeared in their weekend edition, the overt reversal of America's basic values, as expressed by previous administrations, including those of George H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, and Nixon and others, this is the most disturbing to me. Meanwhile, Jimmy Carter says he didn't intend for his criticism of the Bush administration concerning Iraq to be interpreted the way it was in the press, as we just read.
Really?
Carter has told an Arkansas newspaper over the, well, we all heard.
Exactly how is it that you're supposed to interpret the phrase, they're the worst administration in history?
Well, he backpedaled on those words on the Today Show today.
That's not what I wanted to say.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't comparing this administration with other administrations back through history,
uh-huh.
But just with President Nixon's.
All right. Well,
whatever that meant.
Whatever. I think in history means
forever. Jimmy Carter meant exactly what, I mean, that's exactly what he meant. And he's just, you know, I think there's some unspoken rule among ex-presidents, although there really aren't that many left now, right? There's just Clinton, Carter, and the Bushes.
Yeah.
That's it. That is it, because I keep forgetting. And Jimmy Carter's one of those presidents, we were talking about this before the show, I keep forgetting that he's alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then I keep forgetting, not only do I keep forgetting he's alive, when I think about him, I keep forgetting that he was president. Like, to me, he's just a guy who wore a sweater and was attacked by a rabbit while rowboating. It's so weird that we live in a country that once elected Jimmy Carter. That is just a freakish once-in-a-lifetime occurrence. We'll never elect another guy like that. That's like electing Dennis Kucinich, just some big, light-bulb-headed beta male. But there is this sort of unspoken rule, I think, that presidents are not supposed to make fun of one another, or they're supposed to pull their punches or something. So, obviously, that is an example of speaking a little too freely and then having to apologize for it.
He said he didn't intend to say the Bush administration's foreign policy is the worst ever.
What I was actually doing was responding to a question about foreign policy between Richard Nixon and this administration. And I think that this administration's foreign policy compared to President Nixon's was much worse.
Yeah, whatever.
Hillary Clinton said Carter was within his rights to be critical of the Bush administration.
I think it's the duty of every American to speak out when you feel strongly that your president is headed in the wrong direction.
Rattles my bones. That whole voice just makes your spine cringe.
It does. Well, Hillary spent the weekend coughing and wheezing at a commencement address.
What are your plans for this weekend? I plan to cough and...
housing. We know we've got to provide more housing. The president showed me the housing that she's already...
And we're done.
...built here on the campus. It looks a lot better than trailers.
You old poop. The loons are back. A little on Golden Pond humor for you there. Okay. Hey, when did Katharine Hepburn start talking that way?
She always talked that way.
Really? What? It's not just the Parkinson's talking?
No.
Don't pay attention to her. That's just the Parkinson's talking.
She says she didn't have Parkinson's. She got that way of speaking from her uncle or aunt.
That's a lie.
They just had a documentary about it on TCM over the past
week. I thought she died of Parkinson's.
She may have. But she didn't admit to it.
She
didn't admit to a lot of things.
I don't have a penis. I don't even know what I'm talking about now. So, and again, come to think of it, I'm not even sure Parkinson's kills you. Is Parkinson's fatal? Or is it just
I would imagine so, yes.
I mean, I don't really know the answer.
I don't know anyone's died from it. Michael J. Fox is still alive, and he has it.
I guess.
But he doesn't talk like Katharine Hepburn. Well, kind of he does, I guess, if you listen carefully.
You know, the weird thing about Parkinson's is that apparently those jitters are not caused by Parkinson's. Those severe jitters are caused by the medication that controls it. That's the weird thing about it.
I was reading about taking it.
I was reading. What are you, Michael Jackson? Or Michael Jackson, Michael J. Fox. Quit taking your medication this instant. I read this article in Wired the other day about how they're trying to control it by putting this pacemaker in that fires electricity into your brain because that apparently stems the symptoms. Apparently, Parkinson's causes loss of muscle control, and it causes like a weird sort of mental disorientation and blah, 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 blah. And some of those things are only controlled by medication, which in turn makes your muscle spasms a lot worse. Nobody cares. I'm just saying...
Same thing happened to Michael J. Fox, then.
Yeah. So I'm not really sure that Parkinson's itself is fatal. I don't really care that much. Don't.
Maybe if you just take a Motrin.
Yes. Tim Riley, Health Czar. So, blah, 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 Katharine Hepburn, she always talked that way?
Yeah.
In even her early films, did she talk that way?
Well, not as bad. You know, when people get older, their voices get rattlier.
That is true. It's like that whole discussion.
Except for Kirk Douglas, who you can't even understand, who was on Larry King the other night after like 10 strokes. And Larry, that's right, that's hilarious. Is he laughing at due to the fact that he can't understand what you're saying?
Tell me about
or did he pre-script a joke?
Tell me about being in Spartacus. Tell me about being in Spartacus.
Basically, that was about it.
Really? I've eaten there many times myself. Really? For the fifth time? That really is impressive.
Yeah, I think it's getting jaws wired shut.
Never mind.
Well, he's old.
I was going to say, I just finished that Alice Cooper book, which really is pretty great. I've gotten past my bitterness somewhat that we weren't able to interview him, but I just finished that Alice Cooper book, which is really just kind of a straight-ahead autobiography. It's really not about golf that much. It's just an autobiography of his career, but there's a lot of golf sort of anecdotes sprinkled throughout there. And there is, of all things, a photograph of him golfing with Kirk Douglas, which is weird.
That is weird.
Kirk Douglas, who is now several strokes over par. Bam! Several strokes over par! That must be too early in the show. Love! Language bluff. I don't even know where we were going. Was Katharine Hepburn hot when she was younger? Was she attractive?
I guess so, for that period of time.
I mean, she's one of those women like Lucille Ball.
She was never attractive.
Now, see, is that true, though? I mean, there are people that...
I don't know. It depends on what your taste is, I suppose.
I guess. I'm just saying that there are women that I kind of only know either at an advanced age, like I became familiar with them when they were old, like Lucille Ball, who I sort of... The first time I... This makes me sound like a tool. But the first time I really became familiar with Lucille Ball was when she guest starred on Three's Company, as dumb as that sounds. And so she was like 100 years old by the time I even really got to know who she was. So there's women who I either became familiar with when they were already old, or who are so firmly established in sort of non-romantic or non-sexual roles, also Lucille Ball, that it's difficult for me to see them as sort of attractive, you know, sort of sexual beings. Like, it's the Don Knotts syndrome. I'm pretty sure that Don Knotts is just a big, goggle-eyed bastard.
Not anymore. Well, you have to open up the casket to find out.
Yep. But he was just such a goof. You know, he just played such a nerd for so long that I'm not even really sure.
I don't think he played a handsome leading man at any time.
I guess that's not really the case.
Yeah.
So, Katharine Hepburn, I look at old photographs of her, and I'm not sure if she was really attractive or... Because she did kind of look... She looked a little manly to me. That's all I'm saying.
Mm.
Oh, wait, here we got an instant mail about it. Rick, get off Katharine Hepburn. Done and done, sir. She was a fantastic actress, and she didn't always talk that way. She was hot as balls in the Philadelphia Story, by the way. All right, thank you. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul has defended his position on foreign policy and says the U.S. should have a limited role in fighting battles around the world. He also says he does not plan on withdrawing from future Republican debates despite calls for him to do so.
They're saying silence the Constitution, silence the advisors, the founders of the country, silence our platform, close down the big tent, make it very narrow, and as long as you agree with a foreign policy that is failing, then it's okay to be a Republican.
What is he... I guess my question would be, why is he a Republican? He's the guy that was saying that we essentially brought 9/11 on by being over and meddling in the Middle East, which does seem like it has at least a little bit of factual basis to it. So I don't understand why he's a Republican. There's certain guys, and this is not about the partisanship, there's just certain guys that don't make any sense. I remember when I was in Utah, I used to get press releases from these guys, the log cabin Republicans, every now and again. And especially in Salt Lake City.
Both of them?
The log cabin Republican. Log cabin Republicans, and I'm not even sure where that name comes from. The log cabin Republican group is a group of gays who are also Republicans. So it is gay Republicans who they've picked the name log cabin Republicans to identify themselves somehow. And I would get these press releases from them, and I always just wanted to email back with, like, WTF. Like, what is wrong with you? Why are you doing this? And it's like, that
why are you wasting your time?
Seriously, I don't that's got to be a real comfortable meeting to go to. So, anyway, well, whatever. And so that guy doesn't really seem like he ought to be a Republican either, but I mean, hey, different strokes for different folks.
Paul says Republicans have also stood for less military involvement.
I support the Republican platform better than any other candidate I am convinced of. Take out the platform. They're for less government. They're for personal liberty. We ran on our program in 2000 for a humble foreign policy. How can anybody say I'm not Republican?
See?
All right. He's never going to be president.
No.
That voice is way too irritating.
Speaking of somebody else who will never become president, because everyone's forgotten, Governor Bill Richardson once again announces he's running for president.
It means so much to me to announce my candidacy in California.
On this terrible microphone.
The state that I was
not grounded correctly.
And where I'm going to win this primary here in the state.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. All right. Okay, here's Tim Riley.
We now take a break from politics and talk about the new remake of the Bionic Woman.
Thank you.
She's Katie Sackhoff, who is set to co-star as evil Bionic Woman. She shares how she preps for such extreme roles.
I think that I had a vivid imagination when I was a child, and of course, when you're a kid, you pretend that you're everything. And so I just kind of try and get myself back to that uninhibited state of childhood when I'm playing these roles.
Please describe the personality of your character, the evil bionic woman.
She,
There's no evil bionic woman.
The first bionic woman, and she won't let you ever forget that, I don't think. She is cutting away parts of her body that are weak, so she's actually making herself more bionic.
She's very excited to be so busy.
Life's going to be pretty interesting and crazy for a while, trying to do two shows.
For the 3 weeks that this show is on the air.
But, you know, it's, you know, never kick a gift horse in the mouth, I'm happy.
Never kiss a gift horse in the mouth?
Yeah. Maybe on the cheek.
All right, I'm pretty sure that that is a malapropism. I'm pretty sure that that is not how that phrase... Isn't it don't look a gift horse in the mouth?
Don't look.
Yeah, I don't think you're kissing anything. I don't think you're kissing a horse anything unless you're Kenneth Pinion. Bam! Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, the Senate is expected to debate a comprehensive immigration bill later today. The measure was crafted last week by a dozen senators, including presidential hopeful Senator John McCain. There is growing criticism against the bill among the House and Senate. In fact, McCain and Texas Senator John Cornyn, I think that's a Cornyn, I guess, who opposes the bill, were involved in a heated debate in which McCain cursed out Cornyn. He says he has no hard feelings about it.
I don't know anybody who hasn't said something they later regret, and I think there were some words exchanged there that Senator McCain later apologized to me for. I accepted his apology.
Yeah, that's what McCain said. They told the guy, F you.
Yeah.
I just wish more than anything that he was caught on tape. I wish that there was a microphone somewhere there.
I looked
for it. I looked all weekend. And did you see Todd the Corpse tip me off to this? Did you see this picture? The picture of McCain that was on drudge all weekend?
Yeah.
Just looked like a zombie. Looked like it was like full on Dawn of the Dead, John McCain. It was fantastic. All right. This email says, Rick. Did you catch the interview with Alice Cooper? Yes, we heard Alice Cooper on NPR. It was great. And then he says, why should my taxes pay for your fat ass to ride TriMet? Why don't you pay the whole rate? I have no idea what this guy's talking about. Well, whatever, sir. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, most of the money around TriMet comes out of your pocket.
Yeah,
it's subsidized. It's subsidized because they have this fairless square, and it seems to extend in both directions to the very end.
Fairless Square does get bigger with every passing year. You are right about that. I think the bulk of my TriMet and Max riding has been in Fairless Square. I think probably 60% of the time that I've ridden the bus.
Money if there was no such thing as Fairless, and charge everyone.
Does the public transit system here, does it make money or does it lose money? Or does it just barely pay for itself?
Barely pay for itself, if that.
All right. Well, it is. We do have a much better public transit system than a lot of cities. Yeah. People just don't really take advantage of it. So it's really strange, though, that they would operate it if it lost money.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that they would raise the rates a little bit.
A bunch of socialists running this town.
I have in this briefcase proof that there are more than 500 socialists working inside the Portland bureaucracy as we speak. Here's Tim Riley.
The state Senate of California will decide this week on a measure that would allow Californians to vote on whether they want U.S. troops to leave Iraq. In April, Senate President Pro Tem Don Parada introduced a bill saying it would send a message to Washington.
Let the voters of this state come out and say, Mr. President, get us out. We are voting ourselves out of Iraq.
Well, have fun with that.
It's the final showdown for the fourth season of Dancing with the Stars. Tonight's face-off will feature boxer Leila Ali and her partner Maxim. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this last name. It's something in Russian. Former NSYNC member Joey Fatone and his partner Kim Johnson and Olympic speed skating medalist Apollo Anton Ono and his partner, that's a guy, Apollo Anton Ono and his partner Julian Huff. Season 3 Dancing with the Stars runner-up anchor Mario Lopez says that, well, you'll never know what will happen. He has an idea who the champ will be.
You don't know. It's hard to tell because there's always reality show twists and turns. It's not necessarily like the best dancer always wins, so you never know with those things. But I think Leila Ali, being the last woman left, probably has a good
shot. Is
this
like seductive Mario Lopez?
He bothers me so much.
Let me put my mouth really close to the microphone and speak in a low voice. All the better to seduce the women with.
Does it seem like we have an inordinate number of Mario Lopez soundbites lately? Everything. And fired UN Representative John Bolton had this to say via Mario Lopez.
I find that Iraq was disregarding United Nations resolutions 401, B, C, and F. And as such, the result...
I mean, is every time we've had anything on this program, it seems like Mario Lopez is the go-to guy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I have never in my life... Raise your hand if you've seen an episode of Dancing with the Stars.
I have not.
Sarah?
No, I think it was on in the background of a bar I was in.
I don't think I've ever seen an episode of that in my life. I've also, I've never seen Dancing with the Stars, and I've never seen whatever, Skating with Celebrities. I've never seen any of these programs. We really are, in some ways, just phenomenally out of touch on this program, I think. There's all kinds of things that people watch it. We just, I don't think any of us have ever seen. This email says, hey, by the way, TriMet loses $80 million a year. Well done, Portland. Here's Tim Riley.
Yeah, it's true. Because if you get caught with a ticket, it depends on who you are. If they let you go, and sometimes they'll find you. But
see,
for the most part,
I always just say, like, if you get caught without a ticket on TriMet, just say you don't have your ID. What are they going to do? They can't. I mean, I guess they could arrest you, but they probably wouldn't, right?
Right.
I mean, not if you're like a clean, upstanding white person, the cops wouldn't arrest you. The cops don't go after. I mean, as we've noticed, an inordinate amount of tax dollars do seem to be toward pursuing people who do not look that way. So, I mean, really, as long as you look like you just came from OHSU, the odds are that the Portland police are probably going to leave you alone. So, I mean, why would you not just say that you don't have your ID? Who are you? Do you have your ticket? No.
Not that it happens very often. There's nobody checking these things.
No, but I mean,
that's why it loses money.
But I mean, if the cops send somebody through, and is it the regular cops or is it like special TriMet cops?
Well, no, depending on where you are, you're in Portland. I never saw a Portland cop, but Beaverton, I've seen Beaverton
okay,
cops,
but
and that's about it.
If I'm riding the Max to, let's say, the Rose Garden, and a cop gets on, is it a TriMet cop or is it a regular Portland police officer?
It would be a regular police officer, but they have TriMet employees who check for tickets, and then they're usually backed up by the cops to haul you away.
All right. Now, if you don't have your ticket, do they arrest you, or do they just give you a...
I believe they check and see if you have any previous warnings. And if you do, chances are you might get a ticket.
But can't you just say you don't have your ID and just give them, like, if I'm riding the Max without
a... Oh, and give them a phony name?
Yeah.
How are they going to know?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll do that then.
If I'm riding...
Yes.
I'm not advocating that people do this, but it does seem like it would work. Mm-hmm. If I'm riding the Max, and they get on and they say, where's your, ticket, please? And I say, I'm sorry, I seem to have lost my ticket. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, that's a fine for you. What is your name? And I say, Scotty J. And then they say, okay, Mr. J, do you have any ID? And I say, darn it, no, I left my ID at home. They don't have any, I mean, they have to take my word for it, right? Yeah. And then they'll look up Scotty J, and then presuming there are no previous warrants or whatever.
Is that the initial J or J-A-Y?
No, J-A-Y.
Yeah.
And then they'll either give me a warning or a ticket, which I can then ignore because it's not my real name anyway.
Right.
Okay.
I mean,
well,
they wouldn't have these problems if they had, like, turnstiles to go through, like, some other places.
That's true.
Or those metal doors that will open up and castrate you if you don't have a ticket, like they do in San Francisco.
Yes.
But here, you just hop right on and hope for the best. And, oh, I'm not in Fairless Square anymore?
Castrating doors. That'll solve everything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this email, by the way, says, hot as balls. Rick, couple things. You know who used to be a hottie? This is from a woman. Angela Lansbury.
Really?
She says, yes, the age spotted yet lovable star of Murder, she wrote. Check out the picture of Dorian Gray. What a drag, it is getting old. Also, Parkinson's is not a fatal disease by itself, but is a degenerative disease. In its late stages, complications can cause death. Oh, it's sort of like, ALS. It's like Lou Gehrig's. Just one of those diseases that won't kill you, it just makes you wish you were dead.
Angela Lansbury is still acting.
Is that true?
On Broadway, yeah, she's in a play now.
She's great.
Mm.
I just love that lady.
She really is great. I'll have to go back and look up some old pictures of her. She was hot. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
The Stand By Me Celebration and Rolling Road Show invite you to relive the classic coming out film in the town of Brownsville. One of the top 250 films of all time, Stand By Me is a classic based on the novella by Stephen King and was released in 1986. Fans can relive the film during the one-day celebration that includes viewing the film on the big outdoor screen, a blueberry pie-eating contest, 1950s vintage car cruising, a sock hop, and a scavenger hunt for a dead body. The event is scheduled to draw fans to the rural Oregon town of Brownsville, wherever that is. There will be special guest appearances by Stand By Me cast members. They're not saying which ones.
Oh, you know that it's nobody you care about. You know that it's not going to be, well, it might be Corey Feldman.
River Phoenix.
Kiefer Sutherland.
River Phoenix.
Oh, hear me.
Oh, maybe that's a dead body.
Spam! Well done, Tim Riley.
Yeah,
well, seriously, it's not going to be Will Wheaton, who's the only guy from that. It's not going to be Kiefer Sutherland. They're the only two, and it's not going to be John Cusack. I mean, if you're going down the list of people in that movie that we care about, it's not going to be... And we're going to break here, but let me just go through the list. Okay, who do we care about in the movie? John Cusack? No. Corey Feldman? Maybe. Kiefer Sutherland? No. Will Wheaton? Probably not. Jerry O'Connell? No.
Am I missing somebody? Oh, yeah, River Phoenix. Well, I guess he doesn't have much of a say in it, but probably not.
He hasn't got back to them either.
Rivers? River? No, there's nobody. So I don't even know who it'll be. It'll be the boss man, Bob Cormier. That's what it'll be. Hey, the boss man, Bob Cormier from the Racks and Stacks. It's the best on Wax. Here's the Lollipops. Or whatever that song is. Who sings the song Lollipop, Lollipop? Tim?
I'm not even that old.
Really?
No.
Okay.
I may seem that way, but I just don't go back that far.
It's just your curmudgeonly lure.
Do we have any oldies? No, we don't have oldies DJs in here, do
we? We don't. I don't think there are any oldies DJs left anywhere. 503-733-2... Oh, the Shondells. Is it the Shondells? No, no, no. You're thinking of Tommy James.
No.
Tommy James did not sing Lollipop, Lollipop.
That was Crystal Blue Persuasion.
Yeah, and you know what?
The Summer of Love.
I don't really... The Summer of Love, which is 40 years old this year.
You're going to be tired of hearing about it before the end of the summer.
I'm already tired of hearing about it. The only good thing about the Summer of Love was Incense and Peppermints by Strawberry Alarm Clock.
Oh, that's
it.
Good.
Is that from the Summer of Love?
I think it is, yeah.
I think it is. That's a great song.
Well, that's the same time period, anyway.
Can I tell you about Incense and Peppermints by the Strawberry Alarm Clock? And I believe it is the Strawberry Alarm Clock. That song was alternately fascinating and terrifying to me when I was a little kid. I discovered this gold compilation my dad had from radio station KALE. And it was two vinyl records of sort of gold hits from the Summer of Love era. And there was a mixture of bubblegum and rock and roll on it. There was Light My Fire, but it was the Jose Feliciano version. It wasn't even the Doors version. There was Light My Fire. There was Chewy Chewy by the Ohio Express, a great song. There was, what else was on there? One by Three Dog Night. And then there was Incense and Peppermints by the Strawberry Alarm Clock. And that was a great song, but it kind of freaked me out. Like, it sort of sounded weird, and like, I would listen to it, and I would sort of, in my head, imagine what evil, scary hippies were sort of like.
This person is from that same time period, and sang in a band.
What picture are you showing me on the screen? Okay. Tim is showing me a picture on the screen now of a man who sort of looks like perhaps a very aged Kevin Costner.
Mm-hmm. Now, he's from that same period of Summer of Love. You want to take a guess who he is?
Is this a pop singer?
Yep.
This is a former pop singer that you put on the screen now.
Mm-hmm.
Can I see him again? I know we're so late on this break. Sarah's like glaring at
me. Nope, your time is up.
I can't see it. Oh. You got to show me the picture again.
I thought you had your glasses.
No, one of these days there will be a television in this studio. Okay, he is a singer from the Summer of Love.
Well, after that. Within that time period.
That general era. Solo singer or band?
Band.
He was the lead singer?
Yes.
Psychedelic?
Pop.
Pop.
It's from Craig Adams. Thank you, Craig.
One-hit wonder?
No, they had a few hits.
Give me just a second. Still played on the radio? Still played on oldie stations?
Yes.
God, I don't know. Who is that?
Okay. I'm going to show you his picture.
Okay.
What he looked like back then.
This is really exciting for everybody who can't see it. Oh, my God. You're kidding me.
No.
That's Mike Nesmith?
Yes.
Tim just showed me a picture
afforded to you.
A Mike Nesmith from today. How old is he now?
Oh, gee, I don't know.
Jesus, I never would have guessed that was Michael Nesmith.
Okay, I'm going to afford it to
you. He's actually aged pretty well. He still looks like a handsome man.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, how weird. You know, they did have a couple psychedelic songs, though. They weren't really hits. They did have some psychedelic Around the Head era when they did that record.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
All right. How late are we in this break, Sarah? Just a laugh. Okay, I think we're breaking now. We'll be back after this, and we got a few calls. Oh, it's the Cordettes that sang Lollipop. Thank you. Thank you, Scotty. The boss man, Bob Cormier. Here's the Cordettes and Lollipop on your hit station. It's Boss. Back after this with the AM 970 Noon News Hour. The Rick Emerson radio program is 503-733-2970. Rick, a friend of mine works for Mike Nesmith's company, Video Ranch, and apparently he loathes being asked about the monkeys. Nice guy, though. Well, yeah. Well, that's... That ain't goes without saying at this point. Oh, apparently we've got this. Rick, about the Stand By Me festival. Okay, who do you think is going to be making an appearance? Apparently, there's one confirmed actor from Stand By Me who will be there.
The extra who drove the train.
No. Here's a little hint. You don't know the actor's name, but you know the character's name. The character's name is one word.
I do not know.
Oh, come on. Tim gave you a hint earlier when he said there was going to be a blueberry pie eating contest. What kind of Stand By Me fans are you? Lard-ass.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
That's not true. Everybody's seen that movie 1,000 times. It's part of being a good American. Lard-ass will apparently be there. Let's see. This email says, Rick, who was John Cusack in Stand By Me? John Cusack was Will Wheaton's older brother, Denny, who was killed in a Jeep accident. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley is at the Ministry of Truth.
A Beaverton man admitted that he fooled girls into sending him pornographic pictures by pretending to be a 15-year-old boy dying of leukemia.
Come on. That's actually pretty great. How old was he in reality?
Joshua Kistler is 31, and he'll spend the next 24 years in prison.
Now, wait. How old were these girls? Were they of age?
Let's see here. No, apparently not.
Oh, well, bad. Bad. Bad internet creepy guy. Bad.
He taught me stuff a 12-year-old should not know, wrote the mother of a Utah girl who started chatting with Chrysler when she was 12.
Oh, okay.
My love of life turned out to be a 30-year-old pedophile. He also apologized to his victims. I'm sorry for the harm I've caused. I wasn't aware I was causing harm.
All right. Well, okay. Well, I will say, we will...
He coerced young girls into performing sexual acts in front of webcams by appealing to their sympathy.
I'm a 15.
Because he said he didn't have very long to live.
Okay, first of all, we can all say right now...
That guy's brilliant.
Yeah, it is wrong to engage in any kind of activity with underage,
we'll
with
get children. 24 years.
No, and it's bad, and you'll get sent to a PMITA prison. There's no disputing that, so we cannot advocate or endorse that behavior. It is wrong. I will say, however, that is pretty innovative. He does get points... He does get points for style for that. And by the way, he has, in his own perverse way, illustrated an absolute truism about girls, which is the sympathy card is one of the most effective cards you can play with girls, especially kind of young, not too bright girls. So there you go. I'm dying of leukemia. Please show me your boobies. Well done. Here's Tim Riley.
Former Prison Break actor Lane Garrison pled guilty today to vehicular manslaughter and drunk driving for piloting his SUV into a tree last year that killed a teenage passenger. He's 26 years old, and he'll get up to 6 years, 8 months in prison when he's sentenced in August. He remains free of $100,000 bail.
Manslaughter?
I barely knew her.
Let's get Aaron. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, Rick, I was calling about your little TriMet scam here with not having your ID. First off, TriMet, the police there are all, like, Portland, Beaverton, they're all regular Metro police officers that just do a special assignment with TriMet.
Right.
And the other part of it is if you don't carry your ID, they can charge you with failure to present and carry, which is, they can actually, it's illegal not to have your ID on you. So, but most of them probably aren't going to go through the effort of it because, you know, lazy being lazy, but...
I'm listening.
That's about it.
Okay, so they're regular cops, and so they'll come on and they'll give me a warning, or they'll probably give you a warning. I mean, I understand. I'm not advocating this behavior, and it should be noted that when I ride the bus or the MAX, I buy a ticket because I wish to be part of the solution and because I do recognize that we have good public transit here. I'm just saying it does seem like one of those, like jumping the turnstiles in New York. It does seem like one of those things in the system where the cracks are very easy to spot and to take advantage of.
Oh, very much so. Then you have the other group, which is their little TriMet security, which are a bunch of, like, $12 an hour making dudes that really don't care.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, that's the other thing, is anytime the enforcement is dependent upon people who are not making a great, you know, who have no personal investment in it, that's why it's easy to shoplift or, you know, at stores where it's like, you know, you just have to get some, pass some minimum wage, cashier jockey, you know, some register jockey, because they don't care. They have no vested interest in the store's success or not, so.
Except for those loss prevention guys that think they're something akin to Rambo.
Loss prevention. I saw one of those guys tackle somebody one time. Years ago, when I was growing up in Kennewick, there was a store called Buttery Osco, which eventually was bought up. They were bought up by Albertsons. It was a Northwest chain. I saw one of those guys. It was a kid who, I swear to God, had stolen, like, a single can of soda. And the kid was, like, making a run for it. And one of those guys, I don't know whether it was great or retarded, one of those guys, he just chased this kid out of the parking lot and threw himself at this kid. I mean, it was pretty impressive. It's like you expected bat wings to come out. He threw himself at this kid, landed on the kid, got him in like a full-on alligator choking a gazelle to death in the Florida Everglades, death hold, and then just, you know, and dragged him across the parking lot. Must have taken off two or three square feet of skin, but it was pretty great. You can tell that in his head, he was Chuck Norris in Mission, you know, in Missing in Action 3. So, yeah.
Pretty great videos of some store, some guys in England take the little tags that set off the little beeper thing in the store.
Yeah.
And they run out the door and they see how long they can run around the mall until one of the security guards tackles them.
Fantastic. All right, there you go. That's Aaron. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
I was going to say something else, but I forgot what it was. Yeah. Oh, security guards. There was this guy that hops on the Max every day. Some old hunched over guy. Leaning on a cane, and the badge he's wearing says, in big letters, unarmed security.
That's the thing you want to advertise.
What have you done to your life? Because is there such a thing to be hunched over a cane riding public transportation?
And why would you possibly announce that you are unarmed?
Apparently that's company policy where the security company where he works. Unarmed security.
It's wearing a big patch, impotent, on the back. Useless. Can do nothing. I prevent no loss of any kind. Jesus, God. I mean, that really is like one half step up from being a greeter at a Walmart, and you know it's true. Rick, why do the last MAX trains want to run at 1 a.m. when the last call at the bars is at 2? I once asked Mothers Against Drunk Driving about this, and they said they, quote, weren't that concerned about it. Well, there's Mothers Against Driving in action. Did you see that one of the heads of Mothers Against Drunk Driving was busted for DUI last week?
I read that. That was interesting, wasn't it?
Yes, Virginia, there is karma. Here's Tim Riley.
A Central Florida family said they're outraged after learning their new home was the scene of a mass murder, and they weren't told about it until after they moved in. Back in February 2016, Eustis police officer Michael Mount shot and killed his wife Kim, fellow officer Jose Gomez, and Gomez's wife Serena before turning the gun on himself in a bloodbath inside this home. The Johnson family recently purchased this home and knew nothing about it until a neighbor said, oh yeah, there was a triple murder-suicide there.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. I wonder if the house was, I mean, you know why they don't tell people that?
They have services that come in and clean that stuff up.
Yeah, they do. That's actually something I would love to do. I'd love to interview somebody who cleans crime scenes.
There are franchises available.
There are companies, and that's what they do. They do nothing big they just come in if there's been a murder or a suicide or something messy. That's what they do. They come in and they clean the entire place. There was a great movie produced by Quentin Tarantino called Curdled, which stars that woman who plays the cab driver, Maria Villalobos, in Pulp Fiction. And she stars as the employee of a cleaning service who comes and cleans houses after murders have happened. So, well, you know why they don't tell anybody that? Because if you tell somebody that immediately, they're going to offer you 30% less for the house.
Right.
I mean, if that becomes public knowledge, you can't charge full price for that house.
Right.
So,
and there's no law saying that they have to do that.
No. So, you know, screw that. Let's see. Rick, what is your issue with hippies, this email says?
It's the Summer of Love.
Do you even? Yes, I know. Did they do that behind the tie-dye thing on the History Channel?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Do we even know what a hippie was or is now? It's not easy to define a hippie. We are not all the same. I'm not even sure if I... we work with a hippie. We work with... what's her name? Lacey Turner? Lacey Turner was totally a hippie.
Mm.
I don't know if she still is. I don't know if you stay a hippie or if you are a hippie, if that's just like a thing that is just with you forever. He says, maybe I just look like one. Doesn't it seem that you are ascribing certain characteristics to a group of people based on their appearance? Wrong. It is easy, though. It saves time and effort. Another topic, this email is way too complex. Another topic I would love to discuss with you someday. Maybe one of your friends will discuss it with you, or do they all think the same way you do? I have no idea what this email is about. Is it typical of Gen Xers to dislike hippies? Yes. It is typical of everybody, here's the thing, sir. It is typical of everybody who was not a hippie to dislike hippies. I would say this almost unhesitatingly. Hippies are disliked, I would almost say universally loathed, by everybody except other hippies. Anyway, blah, blah, blah.
There aren't that many around anymore.
No.
No, Smothers Brothers.
Thank God.
I don't see. Do they count? I'm not sure if they count as hippies or not. Really? Yeah. Is that true?
Well, they're CBS hippies. Well, they were for a period of time anyway. They were. Have you seen that documentary, Smothered?
I have, yes.
Smothered is really, really good. I had to put them on the dream list of people we want to interview.
All right, here's Tim Riley. Well, apparently this explosion that leveled the mobile home was caused by someone trying to cut the mobile home with a blowtorch. So maybe they're trying to turn it into a duplex.
I was just going to say they're trying to turn a single wide into a double wide.
Yep.
Fantastic.
So the two victims were taken with a newfangled flying machine over to a manual. We don't know what kind of shit.
Genius. This email says, Rick, FYI, this, and I won't say where he works. It is a prominent grocery store here in the Northwest. He says, FYI, the security guards that work for my company can't even touch a thief. People often walk out with carts full of groceries. All the security guards can do is watch them go. Sad but true. Fantastic. That does seem like a safe way to steal things, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Here's Tim Riley.
Two people in Cocoa Beach, Florida, hospitalized with an apparent dispute over a paycheck led to several people being punched out at a Wendy's. It all started, apparently, some people being docked hours on their paycheck, and one of the employees was upset and started punching his co-workers. When I was walking in, I saw him throw a computer at someone. I guess he was getting ready to beat up the manager then. And then as he was going out the back door, I guess they heard a commotion and they were trying to see what was going on. And then she threw a computer through a window. And then he punched the manager in the face and she fell down too. Two people were transported to Cape Canaveral Hospital with non-fatal injuries. There are plenty of shattered windows at the Wendy's. And the person with the paycheck dispute has been arrested and charged with battery.
Let's see. We've got Rick. Writing a match without a ticket is a $94 fine. I watched a dirty, smelly hippie get a ticket the other day. I was hoping to see a beatdown. Sadly, no such luck. Signed, your token Puerto Rican. Let's see. Rick, you were curious about the funding of TriMet. If I read correctly, about 21% of the funding from TriMet comes from fares. The rest from... This is the less conventional F-A-I-R-S spelling. The rest from the state and federal government, they are constantly raising the rates here, and that is typically for fuel costs or inflation. Let's see. What else do we have here? Blah, 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 blah. Exercise balls, blah, 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 blah. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Britney Spears brought her new group, the M&Ms, to Florida over the weekend for a Saturday night performance at a South Beach nightclub. Those who didn't want to pay the $48 ticket price waited outside in the rain until the pop princess emerged to hop into a waiting SUV.
I love you, Tony! I love you!
Who was that? Was that
with Britney Spears?
Who are those people? I mean, I don't understand. Here's the thing I don't get. I don't... There are three celebrities that come to mind here. One is Britney, one is Paris Hilton, and the other is Michael Jackson. All three of them have these apparently still loyal and rabid fan bases.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand where those people come from. I mean...
They're hired at $50 a crack. I was just, a box lunch.
See, but you know, that's the thing is, you almost do speculate that they are on the pay, as they say in New Zealand. Because, you know, first of all, the Beatles used to do that. It's well known that in the early days of Beatlemania, a lot of that was generated by Brian Epstein. Brian Epstein would hire girls to scream for the Beatles and to throw jelly beans at them. That was their gimmick early on in the day. Is that they Brian Epstein paid these girls, whatever, $10-$15 to throw, to sit there and throw jelly beans and cry and, you know, and throw themselves, which is the same thing that Kiss did later on. Mm-hmm. Kiss hired girls to sit in the front row of their concert and scream and, you know, and faint and do, you know, all of this because they knew an A&R guy was going to be in the audience. I guess it's possible that they could still do that, but you wouldn't think that would be able to remain secret. You'd think that they were hiring people to cheer for Britney Spears. Eventually, somebody's going to get tired of it or get their nose bent out of shape. And they're going to, you know, they're going to squeal about it to TMZ. It does indicate, therefore, that there are still large fan groups for people like Britney Spears. But Sarah and I were talking about this today. I have no idea who those people might be. And Britney Spears is really, she's crossed the line. She's gone from being just sort of uninteresting to just sort of being embarrassing. She's just kind of walking around with her boobs hanging out, just sort of, look at me. But
acting like we should all still care about her?
Yeah, she's just all, she used to have that, like, she used to see these pictures of Britney Spears, and she was sort of like those girls in Playboy where she had like a sheen on her, sort of a buffed kind of polish to her, and just sort of a glow. And now it's like you halfway expect to see like a tire track right up her backside. I mean, she just looks all kinds of unpleasant. And I do have to say this, and I don't know whether to ascribe this to motherhood or just the ravaging forces of time, but there does seem to be a sort of an unpleasant sagging going on with Britney Spears, which is not helped by the fact that she walks around without any visible means of support, if you know what I'm talking about. All right, let's do one more. Oh, damn. We are so behind. We got a break now. We will have more from Tim Riley ahead. We have Lisa Goddard. More from Tim Riley ahead. Top five tune-out songs for Scotty J. Your phone calls, Peter Carlin for the Oregonian at 2 o'clock. Like is at 3. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Rick, I just got back from the United Kingdom. Prices there of gas prices didn't go up a penny in 2 weeks. Prices around 94 pence. I think that's like $1.80 per liter. No matter what retailer, diesel is exactly the same price. Gas companies raise the price because they know they can get away with it. Our government is firmly behind them. Blah 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 blah. Yeah. So you know. There's just nothing you can do about it. I hate to sound apathetic, but seriously, what can you do? I think that's the other reason I don't complain. I know I keep going back to this, but I mean, this apparently it is one of today's big stories. It's what the cultural pulse is vibrating about today. I guess I don't complain about gas prices because there's nothing your ass can do about it. So And you can argue that many of the things I can fetch about on a daily basis is stuff that nobody can, you know, the things that nobody can do anything about. And I, you know, so maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But, I mean, gas prices are a thing that it's totally and wholly out of our control. So, I got enough things to be angry about in my life. Gas prices are not going to be added to the list. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill. CNN radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there. How are you today?
Well, hello. How are you?
I am dandy. How was your weekend? Do you feel rested and rejuvenated?
You know, I should, but I don't. I still feel like I'm kind of walking around in a drug-induced NyQuil haze, but I didn't actually take any NyQuil or any drugs.
All right, so you sort of feel groggy today? You feel listless?
I do. You know, this is how I think I'm actually experiencing muscle atrophy. I think that might be the problem. I played softball on Saturday.
Yeah,
we're playing the Washington Post. And I, you know, run into home base, and I fell, just my legs gave out. They just didn't have the muscle to run 10 feet.
I feel like I'm failing you. I should have some joke about playing the Washington Post. I was
setting it up there, and I was giving you a little time.
I don't really know. I don't know that I can't come up with any sort of a decent comedic rejoinder to that. All right.
I'm feeling better. I'm doing better than Friday, that's for sure.
All right. Yeah, on Friday, I will say this. You sounded like you were in sort of a special little happy place on Friday. Let me just put it that way. I do get the feeling that I think that you had reached that sort of event horizon where you were actually so exhausted that it no longer mattered. It was like a wheel moat going so fast it looks like it's standing still. I do get the feeling that on Friday, if I had let you, you would have just talked for a good 3, 4, 5 hours straight.
I was vaguely maniacal.
Yeah, no.
I got some weird emails during that period.
I would say not even vaguely, my friend. So, All right. Hey, let me ask you this real quickly. Yes. I'm just going to ask you this. What do you know of CNN radio correspondent Amanda Moyer? Have you met her? Do you know much about her?
I know her well. We've been through two hurricanes together.
I didn't know that, really.
Indeed, yeah.
Now, is she a regular correspondent? Is she a fill-in? Is she a temp? What does she do?
She's a brand new, shiny, full-time correspondent. So we used to have 5 correspondents, and she is now number 6.
All right. Okay. So we spoke to her for, I think, the second or maybe third time today. She seems very competent. She does seem to know a number of things. I don't entirely know that she caught into my unique brand of comedy, though.
I do think you scare her just a little.
Okay, well, I'll take that.
But it's good. I think it's good because the thing is, Amanda is really good. She's very professional. And so I think figuring out the transition there.
That always gets us into trouble when we talk to anybody who has even the slightest hint of professionalism.
Exactly.
It takes us a while to sort of expunge that from their personality.
You can fight all you want. In fact, she and I have talked about you before. I don't remember. I think when she first got the job. Because she knew, and I said, you know, you can fight it, or just roll with it, Amanda. It's a good time.
She doesn't really do either. She sort of does when we, as a little sports analogy for the people out there. When I talk to Amanda, she doesn't really fight it or roll with it. She just sort of does this rope-a-dope where... Where I'm sort of like throwing out the comedic jabs, and she just sort of lays back against the ropes and just sort of takes it and kind of goes, every now and again. Doesn't really work with me on it. She just sort of absorbs the blows.
She is a delightful person.
All right. Well, I'm...
Like, outside of the profession, she's fun to hang out with.
I'm reserving judgment at this point.
I hear you. You know, as is she. You guys are both in your corners.
Okay, that's fine. I'm confident in who I am. I don't need the approval of Amanda Moyer. I can look myself in the mirror every day with no problem.
She is a natural redhead. That might add a little spice.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll put that in the plus column.
Yeah, see, we've got the two redheaded ladies in the CNN.
Now, I was going to start talking about your hair color, but that crosses the line into creepy. I was going to say that you seem like more of a strawberry blonde.
I really am. It's true. I'm trying to inch my way into the redheaded. I'm not quite there. You're
now,
right.
Now, do you color your hair, or is that an all-natural color?
I do not. I have a feeling that I will, in fact, someday.
You're just going to give in to the inevitable?
Yes, I think so.
Amanda Moyer's cute.
Now, you know, Sarah Dillon is not a natural redhead. She has red hair, but it does come... It does in fact come out of a bottle. So you'd be in fine company there.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I'm looking at a picture of Amanda Moyer right here.
Yeah.
All right.
She looks very wholesome.
Kind of a Jodie Foster thing going on.
That is who it is, yes.
That she
it's
looks
very wholesome. Yeah.
Jodie Foster will play her in the CNN film.
She is extremely wholesome.
Do you have a choice for who she'll play you in the CNN film, Lisa Gunn?
Oh my goodness, I don't know.
We get a lot of Jennifer Grey comments.
A lot of Jennifer Grey.
30 Dancing is Jennifer Grey.
Why don't I just go to Angelina?
All right, well, there you go.
Why not?
Okay, fantastic.
People don't know.
I'm going to make a note of it. Done and done.
A redheaded Angelina. I don't know. I got to think about that.
Let me ask you this. I talked about this last week. I said that this whole immigration thing, I start to talk about it, and it's just sort of a drain on my internal CPU. But I am so confused about this. Is there agreement on this immigration thing, or is there not? It seems like on Friday they were celebrating that they'd had this huge immigration benchmark, this milestone, but now today apparently there's all this discord and entropy surrounding it. Is this going to go through or not? I really don't know.
What is happening? Well, first of all, I actually did read the entire bill. So if any of your listeners want to do a immigration bill quiz, I am ready. But the deal is that there is, at one point, it didn't seem that anyone could agree on anything. And what we have now is a small group of people who have agreed on something. And because this issue is so complex, just having that is significant. And the fact that this particular group of people is made up of very powerful senators who generally, more or less, have the backing of their leadership. So there's this feeling that this group has the ability to get this bill through the Senate. And it does seem like this bill could pass the Senate right now. Of course, the House is a whole different situation. But having read this bill, and it changed just a little bit this morning, but in general it's the same. It is incredibly complex, and there are very clear things that you see both sides would really not like, and you understand why it is a compromise, but it's very tricky. It changes not just
of life for illegal immigrants, but it also changes our immigration system in general.
Let me ask you this, and I am not, as you know, it's not like I'm some right wing nutcase or whatever. But let me run down sort of the list of groups in America in a broad sense. Okay, we got folks like myself who are born here, you know, and we are citizens by birth.
Right.
You got folks who are legal immigrants who came through. I guess they don't come through Ellis Island anymore, but you know wherever it is, you know, that they came from. You know, right. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we get a lot of immigrants from Russia and the Eastern Bloc countries.
Right.
You've got people who legally immigrated here. You've got people who are here on student visas or guest worker programs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. Now, of those, let's say roughly four or five groups of people, it seems like this is a thing that only benefits and therefore would only appeal to the illegal immigrant camp. I don't understand, just from a logistical and financial point of view, who else would possibly be in favor of this unless it's companies that are getting cheap labor off people who are here illegally anyway.
It is two, in the business world, there are two large groups. One is companies that may, perhaps industry that want the cheaper labor, but also companies that want high-skilled labor. That's a smaller part of this bill, likely, but it still is potentially 300,000 to 400,000 visas will now be issued based on this point system, so that Kennedy staff even passed out this example of a engineer from India. I should look up the name that they were using. It was pretty funny. Who would, under this merit system, do better than he's doing now? Because if you have a high education and you fit a certain needed skill in America, those kinds of things, those industries say this bill is good for them. The other side is agriculture and farms, and they say that they are just really getting killed right now because they need more seasonal workers. And the idea is that perhaps this guest worker program, part of it is just for seasonal workers, and it deals with ag jobs separately, too. That gets a little complicated, but the idea is that they would be helped by this bill as well. And in fact, they say that this bill doesn't increase those numbers by enough, even though it allows for 400,000 temporary guest workers each year. Some farmers are saying that's not going to do it.
Okay.
They need more.
I guess my question is, so if this allows X number of the workers who are here illegally right now to legally work in, let's say, agricultural jobs, and again, here in the Northwest, we got a lot of that.
Right.
Would this regulate what they had to be paid? In other words, if we got illegal immigrants now that are somehow sort of grandfathered into this worker program, is like a fruit company still going to be able to pay them like $1.10 an hour, or are they going to have to raise how much they pay them?
They would have to, under this bill, they would have to be paid what the bill refers to as a market rate. And that gets complicated as to how that's decided, but the idea is that it would have to meet federal standards for a market wage.
Well, then what is the point? I mean, I guess, I'm not trying to be adversarial about this.
It still could be minimum wage. It's still, and in fact, there aren't a lot of employers that still pay minimum wage, depending on where you are. It still could be minimum wage.
So confusing.
I guess the idea is, are there still jobs out there, hundreds of thousands of them, that American workers will not work for a variety of reasons?
Well, that was my question. You always hear that they're doing jobs that Americans won't do. Well, of course an American's not going to do that job for $1 an hour.
$5.15, would an American do it?
And it seems like we're never really going to know that unless... It seems like that is a statement that is rooted in pure speculation as opposed to any sort of empiric fact.
Well, it's difficult. We do know that, again, going back to the farm example, we do know, and you all read all about it, all the farmers last season, all of the crops, especially in California, the whole West, I saw tons of pictures of farmers next to big piles of peaches that weren't getting picked and all those kinds of things, because they said they just weren't able to get the workers because of the crackdown on the border and they didn't have a guest worker program. So I think supporters would point to that and say, we know that we need more low-wage workers than we have right now and that we don't have in those areas. And I think especially the nature of these jobs being temporary, someone who has some kind of permanent status in America, it's not in their interest to work a seasonal agriculture job as much. That's a more difficult life. Someone who may be coming from Mexico for here for 2 years or wants to stay here longer, if that's their entry, if that's what they've got to do, they would be more willing, for the argument goes, to do it.
All right.
I mean, I think your argument is just one side of the problem that they have with this bill. I think there's a lot of people saying exactly what you're saying. I don't get it. Why are we even doing this? But on the other side, of course, is this is the whole amnesty issue. And these illegal immigrants, basically,
don't have to do too much and they can stay.
It just, and I know
you go
I,
back, you go back and forth on that.
And
it's
I just
significant fines, but
and I have to be careful about this because it's really easy to sound like Lou Dobbs, you know. And then that's just one step away from sounding like Howard Beale. And so I got to be sort of careful. I
and plus, down the road, right?
And again, you know, and I'm here in the Northwest where there is a lot of what we call seasonal labor that comes through here because it's a big, you know, we got a big farming community here in the Northwest, and so there's a lot of illegal workforce that is here. But it does seem like the bottom line is that we're willing to sort of turn a blind eye to the fact that we got 11 million people here who got here by cutting in line, and we're willing to look the other way just so I can pay less for a can of peaches. I mean, it really does seem like, you'll forgive the phrase, just another way. I mean, it just seems like we're overlooking this because Americans don't want to pay a whole lot for the next can of Del Monte fruit cocktail that they buy.
You know, but then you look at immigrant groups want this bill, or they want something like it. You know, they say they want the opportunity to earn these lower wages. And again, it's not always low wages. Sometimes it's higher wages. But in general, it is a lot of lower skilled workers. But they're saying that this is what they want. They want this kind of legal status. And in this bill are some very significant legal protections for those workers that give them a serious avenue to court and to fight legal battles if they don't feel like they're being treated correctly. There's one type of farm category for workers, not every farm category, but there's one where employers have to pay for your housing, they have to pay for your transportation. You know, there are provisions that it does seem Democrats put in this bill to protect those workers from that point of view, and a lot of those workers say, yeah, we want some kind of status. There are significant fines, on the other hand. That's what Democrats would point to.
I know we've been talking for like 3 hours here, but let me ask one final question. To the best of your knowledge, in most other industrialized nations, are there other countries that have a comparable economic setup to America where something like this exists? In other words, you know, like in France, can I just sort of sneak into France one day and then ask to stay and be given a job?
You know, that I don't know the answer to that question, but I
mean, I'm not trying to be flip about it. I really am curious as to whether this is a thing that exists in other countries already. The idea that if you sneak in and manage to evade detection for a given period of time, that they'll just sort of like wave you in and let you stay and give, you know, and give you a job. I'm not trying to be crass about it.
Wasn't that kind of issue in Syriana, though, when they were in, was it Saudi Arabia, and with Indian migrant workers in the oil fields who were there illegally, and they were cracking down. I mean, not to say George Clooney knows all about the...
You bested me there. I have no idea.
But I do think that was an issue there, and I think there are countries that have issues here, but not to the extent that the United States does. And all right, two things I have to point out about this bill. First is, we talk a lot about enforcement, people that want to watch enforcement of this bill. The deal is that these guest worker programs and this legalization program technically wouldn't start until some certification happens about the border, that there would be, for example, 18,000 total Border Patrol agents and 27,000 detention beds. We've talked about that before, but in looking over this on the weekend and in calling people, it turns out that many of those triggers are precisely things that already exist now or things that already are underway, meaning that they're setting this border enforcement trigger to things that we already have or things that we will have very soon. It's not necessarily a big beefing up of the border to start these programs, so people should know that. There are other recommendations, if they get the money, that will do more. But then the second thing, and this goes to an issue you brought up, and you're the only one I've heard bring this up, English language, and that many of these immigrants would have to learn English or be learning English to move ahead in the process. How about in the back of the bill, in this very last title that, honest to God, is called miscellaneous, in the very first paragraph of that little miscellaneous section, it designates English as the common language of the United States.
Are you saying that would affect only immigrants, or if this passes as it's currently written, it would in fact mandate that English is the national language?
It uses the word common language. So it's not, and you can interpret that as you will, but that's the phrase that it says. It says, we determine that English is the common language of the United States.
And
that's in this bill, but, you know, I haven't heard many people, if any, reporting that.
Well, that's because they don't have the laser-like vision of these things.
I'm a geek is what it is, yeah.
One final very fast question. You may not even know the answer to this, so I don't want to moyer you and ask you something that you may not have the answer to. And that's okay. I feel bad because I threw Amanda a question earlier today that she clearly didn't know the answer to.
And I think she feels a little bit like I ambushed her, which wasn't my intention. Right. It's just that I have a relentless thirst for knowledge, Lisa.
Right, right.
Clearly. My final question is, to your knowledge, if you even know this, what is the average wait time to become a legal citizen of the United States? If you get in line and go through all the legal processes, what is the wait time to become a citizen?
I would be interested to see what experiences your listeners have had with people that they know, but the official figure that's given is 8 years right now. Jeez. But I believe it is actually could be more.
Right.
In reality. And one of the triggers in this bill, we talk about these triggers, is that everyone who applied for a visa before 2005, so this huge backlog that we have right now, all of those visas have to go through the process before any illegal immigrant could start.
All right.
So it is just illegal immigrants are going back in line, but it's a very long line.
Fair enough. All right, Lisa Goddard, sorry for keeping you so long today.
No, pleasure.
And you do sound incrementally better than you said on Friday.
I most certainly am.
All right, enjoy the rest of your day, Lisa.
All right, you too.
There you go. Lisa Goddard on the Hill, ladies and gentlemen. All right, 503-733-2970. All right. All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take a break, come back. Tim Riley around the corner from the Ministry of Truth. Then we've got Nate the World Traveler, who's going to talk about his plan to go cross-country with his girlfriend and one-year-old son with, quote, a drawer full of cash. What else do we have? Coming up at 2 o'clock, Oregonian TV critic Peter Carlin and Scotty J's top five tune-out songs. Stay there. Here's the Drive-By Truckers coming to Clark County July 4th. Don't go anywhere.
Right now.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian, Nate the World Traveler, Scotty J's top five tune-out songs. Like us at 3. Ladies and gentlemen, he's your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator. Will you please make way for the Reverend Tim Riley?
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
An explosion from an acetylene tank that injured two people when one of them tried to saw a trailer in half with a welder's torch. This happened on Cedar Canyon Road in the rural part of the Washington County city of Banks.
The rural part, as opposed to the sprawling urban metropolis that is the rest of Banks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So they were flown away from what's left of this trailer.
Genius.
And there's no word on their condition.
And so
they really shouldn't have done it.
Using a torch to cut a trailer in half, mm-hmm. And it never occurred to them to keep the torch away from the tank.
Mm-hmm.
But they're both alive?
Yeah, they're both alive.
And they're just in Darwin's waiting room?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Hillary Clinton is really interested in what you think her theme song should be.
Okay.
So if you go to her website, she's taking a poll.
Oh, God.
Oh, and you get to play them all, too.
Cue high concept talk radio topic right now. When is her way? Is it just HillaryClinton.com?
Yes.
All right, hold on. Hillary, spare me the bitches back jokes, please.
Choose our campaign song.
Oh,
listen and follow the 9 songs and choose your favorite.
Oh, so you can't just submit your own.
No,
because she knows that everybody would pick something with bitch in the title.
Right.
All right, let's see. This is, okay, I'm going to HillaryClinton.com. Let's see. Skip sign up. Go to HillaryClinton.com. Yes.
I have it right here.
I'm trying to skip that. I know, but I'm trying to read along with you.
Oh.
Hold on. I'm trying to skip the sign up. All right. Where are we? Okay. I'm at the front page. Choose
the campaign song.
I don't see that. This is an ill-designed website. Oh, here we go. Choose our campaign song.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Click here to listen to the choices.
Yeah.
And pick Hillary's campaign song.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, so go ahead.
So you can choose Blinded by the Light by City of Blinding Lights.
Darn it.
Okay. By the U2s. Suddenly I See by KT Turnstile.
Oh, that song's going to date itself pretty quickly.
I don't even know what that is. KT Turnstile? Turnstile?
You can play it.
The hell?
So I hit play and it says stop. The player says stop. Well, it won't let me do it.
Jesus.
Okay. Well, you can't listen to any of the songs. I'm a believer from the...
What was your name?
Let me try.
Tim?
Hold on. Let me try it over here.
KT Turnstall.
Okay.
KT?
I'm hitting play over here. We'll try my computer. Oh, this is not Casey Tunstall. I'm sorry, this is the other one.
Oh, I'm a Believer by Smash Mouth.
Let me try this KT Tunstall. This is the worst bit. The most badly executed bit. These are the songs that Hillary Clinton is submitting. All right.
It's really catchy, but kind of annoying.
Hillary Clinton wants you
kind
to...
Kind of like
I know this song.
Yeah.
I hate this song.
No, you secretly love it.
But
I wait for the hook.
I hate it because it's like...
It's crappy, but it's really catchy.
I hate it because it's like candy. You know that it's going to be taste great for like a day, and then you're never going to want to hear it again. Oh, God, no, I hate this song. Let's never hear that
totally
again.
She's totally going to pick that one.
So
I can't even picture it.
Get Ready by the Temptations.
We'll skip I'm a Believer by Smash Mouth. Why would it be I'm a Believer by Smash Mouth and not the Monkees? Is she trying to tap into that youth market with the big the Smash Mouth demographic?
Maybe she could get clearance on that. Mike Nesmith is being stubborn.
That's true. You know, that might be it, actually. The Monkees might have told her to stuff it. No.
Get Ready by the Temptations.
Hillary's way too white for this. Okay.
No.
These songs are all terrible. I mean, the songs aren't terrible, but these songs are all terrible for Hillary, and I love the Temptations. These songs are all terrible choices for her, though, because these songs are all about how great the girl is, and it just sounds awkward. It sounds awkward to have, like, you know, I never met a girl that makes me feel the way that you do. That just makes me feel icky. All right, no. What is next?
Ready to Run by the Dixie Chicks.
All right, so these are all the songs that Hillary Clinton is offering as selections to be her campaign song. This is Ready to Run by the... Oh, this is totally when she starts talking to that faux hillbilly voice of hers.
Yeah.
I don't feel... I don't want your life.
It's my grit.
No. No. Not going to work.
Wreck This Country by Shania Twain.
No. No. Why would you possibly... Who selected these songs? You know that Hillary didn't. God damn, I hate Shania Twain.
I woke up this morning,
yeah, me too.
Buzz rolling round in my brain.
No one from Canada sings this way. Fake accent alert. Fake accent alert.
Feels pretty good just the same.
Not only does she pretend, I mean, isn't Shania Twain the one who pretends to be Indian, even though she's not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, I'll take Stolen from AC/DC for $1,000.
Can't keep your feet on the ground.
Yeah, all right,
then there's A Beautiful Day by U2.
God. And you know that this will probably be it, too, because it's...
Really?
Because
I think it's going to be the Suddenly I See.
Oh, this is trying to capture every... This is because they're trying to get some of that...
Oh, maybe.
They're trying to get some of that kink money. trying to get some of that... trying to get some of that Rebecca Webb dollar.
Oh, you said you wouldn't pick on her.
I'm just saying. Up to the stony ground. Oh, you know
you're
this will be
right.
It. You know
you
this will
totally
be it.
Right.
I'll lay you dollars to donuts right now. This will be the song they pick.
Out of luck.
And you know, and it's just so they can...
A new kind of politician for a new era in America.
Yeah, I picture this more for Barack Obama.
Yeah, but it's too late. She's trying to preempt it. That's what I'm saying. She's trying to beat him to the punch with this. Hillary 08 for America.
Stop.
I'm trying to hit the post. I don't even know the song well enough, but blah, blah, blah. She's the woman. Then stop. Totally. That's... Shut up. All right.
And there's Right Here, Right Now by Jesus Jones.
Boy, this is a terrible song. I hated this song when I had to play it as a DJ back in 1991. I hate this song. I hate this song so much. It's almost impossible for me to convey how much I hate this song.
I like that song.
And finally, I'll Take You There by the Staple Suit.
This is another pandering to the White Housewife demographic. This is more that big chill demographic. Isn't this like a...
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, who uses... There's a jingle that uses this. What company? Is it like Expedia or Travelocity or somebody that uses this? There's some... I think there's a travel company that uses this right now.
Nobody crying. Ain't nobody worrying.
This is weird.
I don't think anybody has told Hillary that she's white trash. I don't think anybody has informed her of that fact, that she is, in fact, a Caucasian hillbilly. All right, we're done with that. All right, so there, you know, it's going to be U2. It's going to be the U2 song. There's just no way about that. All right.
The VH1s are taking an in-depth look into Maxim Magazine's 2007 Hot 100 list. Tonight's special will be hosted by actress Megan Fox of this summer's Transformers movie and will feature interviews by many of the Hot 100 women, as well as taking a look at their accomplishments over the past year. Fox says she had a lot of fun with this gig.
I'm really excited about it. It's something I've never done before. It was brand new, and I think I did an okay job, so I'm excited.
Actress Noreen D. Wolf, who's number 100 on Maxim's Top 100 list, says she wouldn't mind moving up just a little bit.
I am definitely aiming to try to go higher, but I am in such amazing, gorgeous, unbelievable, talented company that I'm just so happy to be here.
For what? What show is this?
The Maxim's Top 100 Hottest Ladies.
Okay.
It's on tonight on VH1.
Yeah, but everybody be sure to watch them.
Let's see. Oh, number one is Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, no, we were talking about this last week. It's a very flawed list. Mm. Apparently there's breaking news of some kind. Hi, what is your breaking news, sir?
Yes, I have a confirmed report that there was a bank robbery out of the Wells Fargo branch in Burlingame, and that the gentleman who committed this crime has apparently escaped with his gun, his hole up in the underground parking structure at the Burlingame Fred Meyer.
All right, we should know, by the way, that, you may have confirmation on this.
This is confirmed by another news source.
It might just be confirmed by small voices inside your head that only you can hear, though. So we don't wish to alarm people, but,
No.
Well, so no, just steer clear of the area and don't pick up any hitchhikers out there.
I was planning on it.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Apparently there may or may not be some guy with a gun in the Birmingham area. All right, thank you. Hi, Jim. Jim? You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Give it to me, Jim.
Rick, how are you?
I'm fine, Jim. Come on, Jim. I've got to have it.
Okay, a couple weeks ago, you were talking about Dennis Kucinich, kind of vague.
Yes.
Thought you might like some info about him.
Yeah.
Dennis Kucinich served two terms as the mayor of Cleveland, not Cincinnati. He actually did the talk show circuit with...
Cleveland where?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, I thought you said Cleveland, not Cincinnati, not a suburb of Cincinnati. All right, okay.
Okay. He did the talk show circuit. He was on Letterman and Carson quite a few times. He was on record as being the youngest mayor in the history of the United States at that time in the 80s. When he left politics, he came out here to Oregon. Portland's his favorite place, I guess.
Why are you reciting all these Dennis Kucinich facts?
I'm a Dennis Kucinich... aficionado.
Are you in the...
No, actually, he came out here...
Are you in the employ of Dennis Kucinich?
No.
Do you work for his campaign in any way, even a volunteer position?
I build houses.
That's not what I asked. Do you in any way volunteer for the Kucinich campaign?
No, I'm a Portland resident. No.
All right.
Okay. I know this because he came out here to Portland.
Uh-huh.
I was working for a firm at that time called Media One.
Why? Let me ask you this. What is prompting you to call up and give us the biography of Dennis Kucinich?
You stated on your show that he was from Cincinnati.
I don't think I stated any such thing.
Well, it was about 2 weeks ago.
Well, I may have just made that up, but I don't think I really believed he was from Cincinnati.
Well, I thought you might like to know.
Yeah, well, okay. And now I know. So he's from where?
Cleveland.
All right. Well, there you go. See how easy that was?
Yeah.
See how he did that without taking like an hour of airtime discussing his entire trek across the United States? All right. So you met him. Does he have a big light bulb-shaped head in person?
No, I don't think it's that big. He's actually a nice guy. I haven't talked to him in probably, 15 years?
All right.
Had a bunch of embassy suites. But he did win some awards for industrial production.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Wait, Jim?
Back in the day when it was called video.
What?
Jim?
We're losing your phone. No, I'm sorry. No, we lost his call. I haven't used that in a long time.
I don't want any excuse to play the Come On, Jim.
I'll do one.
There aren't enough.
Come on, Jim.
Thank you. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, CBS is putting a new twist on some old shows. The iNetwork has announced that Kane will join their lineup this fall. This drama mirrors Dallas, or Dynasty in the sense that it deals with a large family running a successful business. However, the star Rita Moreno says you won't find any of the things...
Rita Moreno?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You won't find any of the things that made Dallas or Dynasty famous.
There is no campy kind of humor.
Years old.
It's not about that. We are dead serious. Oh, we can be funny, too. But it's also about taking this family very, very seriously and with respect. And there's a lot of that in this script.
Plenty of respect. Okay. They're dead serious. Soon she's just going to be dead. So
here's a clip from the new CBS series, Kane, which stars Jimmy Smits.
Really?
They want to buy our sugar, Poppy, because they're in the sugar business.
Do you want to know why they want to buy our sugar, Frank?
I was talking to Senator Barnes today. The government is now ready to support the production of ethanol from sugar instead of corn. It's 10 times more efficient.
No one's going to watch this show.
The new oil. Today you're putting it in your coffee. Tomorrow we're going to be driving our cars with it.
This is going to be a terrible program.
There's no word on what date Kane will make its season premiere.
But it's good. I will tell you, though, that the date of its
special.
The date of its season, the date of its cancellation will be 2 weeks after whatever the date of that premiere is. Let's talk about somebody who was hot as balls back in the day, and that is Rita Moreno. Rita Moreno, people in my generation may only remember her from Sesame Street and Oz, the television program Oz on HBO. Let me encourage you to go back. I don't know what she did back in the day other than West Side Story. But you watch West Side Story. She is unbelievably hot. She is white hot, or brown hot, as the case may be. She is sort of a cocoa hot. Unbelievably attractive. I mean, just a 10. Beyond a 10, if that's possible. So now she's just kind of old and craggly, and she looks like she ought to be doing Polygrip commercials. But, I mean, she was just scorchingly beautiful at that time. A lot of emails saying that Hillary is taking a poll about her song, and they all end with, "It sounds to me like Hillary really needs a large poll, Rick." She might be less cranky. Tell her to take a large poll every day. Maybe she'll be nicer.
Awesome breaking David Hasselhoff news.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Here's Tim Riley with breaking David Hasselhoff news.
He has emerged victorious in court. He has won custody of his two children.
What?
He has won custody of his two children.
Are you kidding me? Oh, F that guy.
Now, we're told the judge will stand by the evidence presented by the court-appointed expert who performed psychological evaluations on the family. The expert said Pamela Bach, Hasselhoff's ex, was abusive to her kids, especially Haley, the younger of the two. The expert also noted that Bach refused drug testing, among other things. Sources say the judge gave David full custody for 2 weeks until the next hearing's held.
How bad could the mom possibly be?
She's very, very bad.
I mean, was she caught, like, beating the children or something?
Perhaps so.
And we're not saying it's the case, by the way.
No,
we're simply speculating. We have this friends of this guy says, my friend just called me to let me know there are cops all around the parking structure of the Burlingame Fred Meyer. So apparently there's a guy with a gun.
Something made me feel kind of weird the way the guy was talking. Like, is he the guy with the
Rick, there's somebody.
From
I won't say who it is. There's somebody in the parking structure with a gun. And he's growing impatient. I don't understand how bad Patricia, what's her name, could be to give David Hasselhoff. Oh, I just don't understand this world sometimes. This whole world is mystifying to me. All right. Scotty says, she's a drug user. He just drinks. I think saying he drinks is perhaps understating the situation ever so slightly. All right.
But in suburbia, that's more,
I suppose,
acceptable.
Well, it is coming from Scotty, who does have a sort of a skewed, but he does have a vested interest in defending alcoholic fathers. Let's see. You know it's true. We're running so behind, but let's see. This is Nate. Hello, Nate.
What's up?
Hey, this is Nate, the world traveler. How are you, sir?
Good. I've got Kenesha here, too.
And Kenesha is your girlfriend?
Yeah.
All right. Now, this is, we don't have time to talk a lot about this, but I apologize because the show is running really late today.
It's okay. It's funny.
We will talk about this kind of as we get closer to the date. Now, for those who don't know, we talked to you, for the first time a couple weeks ago. You quit your job, or you're quitting your job, right?
Yeah, I quit it, and they said I can have it back if I come back.
All right. And so you and your girlfriend, and she is, what, is she hearing impaired, or is she just at full on, like, deaf?
No, she's deaf.
Full on deaf. Okay, so you and...
Hi!
Hello. Hi. And you're what, your son? Your son with her?
Yeah.
Okay. What is your son's name, if I might ask?
His name's DeLion.
DeLion. How do you spell that?
It's Dandelion, no Dan.
Wait. So just D-E-L-I-O-N?
Yep.
That's a cool name. All right. So you, Kenesha DeLion, you quit your job, you got, as you put it, you didn't have this money in the bank, you had just like a suitcase or a drawer full of money?
Yeah.
All right. And so you are going to be, you have quit your job, and you guys are going to be going on a road trip across the country.
Yes, sir.
Now, when does that actually start?
June 2nd.
June 2nd. And so today, let's see, hold on, let me figure this out. So that is, what, so that's like a week from, that's like a week from Saturday, right?
Yep.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do. You have an end destination, right? You have a place you're going to end up, and that's in Wisconsin?
No, that's the first destination. We don't know where we're going to end up other than back here.
Okay, so it is going to be a round trip, and at some point you're going to be going through Wisconsin. Where in Wisconsin?
La Crosse.
Okay, La Crosse. So here's what we're going to do. Scotty's got your information, so we probably will not get to it today, but I think maybe tomorrow, if you're free, we'll grab you for a few minutes tomorrow because of the audience that we... As soon as we talk to you and...
That's the lion, sorry. He's singing.
I didn't want to ask.
That's so cute.
He's a good boy.
All right.
What's he singing?
He's a, I don't know, one of my songs. He likes listening.
Okay. As soon as we mentioned that you were going to be doing this whole trip across the country, we did get a bunch of people who emailed in and they wanted to know where you were going, if you had destinations in mind, what your route was. So you are leaving from Vancouver, right?
Yep.
All right, so tomorrow probably, I'm going to have you talk to Scotty. We'll figure out a time that works for you tomorrow. We'll have you on, and the audience will weigh in, and we'll get some idea of where you really ought to be going. And then we will track you, reality show style, as you make your trek across the country.
Yes, beautiful. And I want to hear the, we both want to hear the top five for Kenesha.
Oh, that's right, okay, because if we have somebody with
some Def Leppard or Quiet Riot in there.
See, you can make those jokes, and I'm allowed to laugh. I don't think that I'm a man allowed to make those jokes. I'm glad you've done it for both of us, sir.
No, she's fine with it.
Well, and even if she wasn't, really, how would she know? All right.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna put you on hold. Scotty's going to talk to you. We'll find a time to talk to you tomorrow, and we'll figure out how to track you guys as you go across the country and do this whole thing.
Beautiful.
All right. Hold on, sir. There you go. That's world traveler Nate. Def Leppard. Thank you. Thanks so much. All right. This is my mistake, by the way. Of course, Rita Moreno, not on Sesame Street. She was on The Electric Company. She said, hey, you guys, at the beginning of the episode. We take a break
like
here.
Chunk?
What? Yes, exactly like Chunk. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. Peter Carlin, just ahead. Later on, today's top five tune-out songs for Scotty J. Like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7. You say there's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. This Rick Emerson Show email here. Rick, did Tim just say his big vegan meatballs were smothered in marijuana? Does that mean the more you put in your mouth, the hungrier you get? I am confused. Best live read ever. Thank you, sir. 503, he did not say, well, he did say that. He said it, but didn't. Maybe he did mean it. I really don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Oregonian TV critic, Peter Carlin, joining us now on the Rick Emerson, the radio program. Hello, sir, and how are you on this fine Monday?
Hey, hi, I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I am dandy, my friend. It's a pleasure, as always, to have you grace the airwaves of this very fine radio program.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm honored. I feel...
Stop. Can I say something just from me to you, Peter Carlin?
Okay.
I mean this sincerely now.
Yeah.
I don't mean this to sound like a backhanded snark, which sounds like some sort of rare bird that Marlon Perkins would be making Jim, like, tag the ear of.
Mm.
I really do appreciate the fact that when we have you on the program that you don't feel the need just to do to mouth a whole bunch of insincere platitudes and pleasantries at us. I do appreciate that because people have said, well, I heard Peter Carlin on some other radio program and he seemed really polite and happy to be there, and he comes on your program and he just seems like an ass, and you know, and which is actually the go-to term for you. I do appreciate the fact that when you come on this program, you don't feel the need to pretend to be happier or more pleasant a human being than you really are.
But I think, you know, as you know, that comes from the love and the respect that two professionals have for one another.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying, that I don't have to pretend.
And that's why you, sir, I believe, are a genius.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Let's talk Sopranos. So, first of all, they are doing that thing where they screw us out of an extra week. Next week is just what, a rerun or nothing or a retrospect? What are they doing next week instead of a regular episode? Do you know?
I think it's just quiet time.
All right, because I know Entourage is taking a week off, too.
Well, it's the thing is it's a holiday weekend, so maybe the chances are better than not that you'll be off commuting with family and friends in some place.
That's not going to be the case. What holiday is it?
It's your Memorial Day.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. So, all right. Well, so we got two episodes of The Sopranos left. Well, let's do the good, the bad, the ugly, the whatever. First of all, I mean, in many ways, a great episode. I do love the interplay between Tony Soprano and Phil Leotardo. Phil, who is just so evil.
Yeah.
Just such a bad guy. That is really great. I love Tony's interaction with the FBI guys.
Mm-hmm. There's a butt coming.
Well, you know, and you know, let's see how well you know me. What is my big complaint about last night's episode?
You didn't like... Jesus, I don't know. You let me have it.
Okay. I think that the writers for a long time dealt with AJ as being sort of a spoiled, you know, just kind of apathetic lump. And I think they wanted to get rid of that, but they've just never really known what to replace that characterization with. And so they just flail around, and one week he's a miniature thug, the next week he's a drug user, and now he's a guy tossing himself into a swimming pool, and he's been institutionalized.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry. Your problem with him being a drug user and a miniature thug, you see, but here my theory is that he's having some kind of reaction to this antidepressant, which they keep kind of mentioning, and everyone keeps talking about, well, you know, and they keep mentioning it by name, and I'm not certain if that's a real drug or just a...
Lexapro?
Huh?
Lexapro?
Yeah.
I think it is, actually. I'm pretty sure it is a real drug, but I don't know.
But anyway, so my pet theory is that, you know, kids or people can have reactions to those psychotropic medications, and sometimes the side effects can actually make their behavior way less predictable and way more mercurial. And people have been known to go on the occasional psycho killer bender as a result.
I guess, except that his personality was already really, they were already having these weird, these massive swings in his temperament even before he started getting it. Like there was that time
when here's the thing. You're trying to apply a rational analysis to somebody who, as we're beginning to learn more and more this year, is having some kind of psychic meltdown. You know, he's got psychiatric problems, which means that his processing and his cognitive ability may not be quite as balanced as yours.
So you think that this has been an ongoing pattern of mental deterioration over a few seasons?
I don't know if it's been going over for a few seasons, but I think realistically, or in the real world, that kind of stuff presents at about the age that that AJ is currently.
Well, that is true. In fact, paranoid schizophrenia, especially, I think that they say that there is some weirdly specific time at which you're no longer at risk. I think it is like 23 years of age or something. Like, at that point, you are no longer at risk of being a paranoid schizophrenic. And my wife is telling me about it. It is some like oddly specific time frame, and after which, like, if you don't have it, the odds are like 99.999 that you'll never get it. But because there's that thing where he tried to kill, Corrado Soprano, and you know when he was like doing cocaine and passing out and having panic attacks in the restroom of that weird club that he was going at, going to in New York and whatever. It just seems to me like last night's episode, especially, it just seems like the character is being very, very overwritten. I mean, it just seems that they are painting in the broadest, most primary colors. I'm not saying... I can hear your truculent sigh.
That was just a breath. That was not freighted with any particular message. So
I'm just saying it seems like they have lost any sort of sense of subtlety with that character. It just seems almost like it is... like it is a bad parody of the way you would write a troubled young person. That's all I'm saying for a show that usually has kind of a delicate touch with such things.
Yeah, but I think that if you hang out with post-adolescents who are in the middle of their first depressive breakdown, that subtlety is not a hallmark of their behavior pattern.
Well, I suppose.
I mean, I don't know how many times you've had to go roaring down the highway at 90 miles an hour to stop a friend from killing themselves, but it tends to be kind of dramatic and not the least bit nuanced at all.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe. I mean, and maybe those things in real life do just come out of nowhere, because it does seem like in a very short time, he went from just being kind of an apathetic sort of a-hole into just being like this weird, like, existential, depressed guy.
Yeah, I've seen it happen, my little friend.
All right, well, you know, maybe you and I travel in different circles. I'm just saying it seemed, and, you know, maybe that's a function of the show only airing once a week and it being sort of an artificially compressed time frame, too.
There's that, too.
So, I suppose. Boy, Carmella, how much in denial, though, is she, where as they're rolling AJ into the mental ward, Carmella's parting line is, he was always such a happy little boy.
Well, yeah, you know, but I mean, I think that's a parent thing. To me, it was like she was a little more obnoxious when they got back home, and she and Tony got into that little fight about whose fault it was, and she, like, suddenly, you know, she has that weird, very non-simpatico thing of being, like, totally anti-gay and totally, totally uncomprehending of anything outside what she considers to be the bounds of normality.
Right, right.
And so she, you know, has zero sympathy. I mean, you know, she's kind of a real reactionary suburbanite in some ways.
The one moment that I thought was really great, I mean, you know, God, there's moments when... And we could do a whole show about James Gandolfini and how great he is and what could he possibly do after this and, you know, whatever. But that call or that moment yesterday when Carmella, after they institutionalized AJ, when Carmella accuses Tony of, quote, playing the depression card.
Yeah, yeah. See, that was it. That was part of the same discussion.
It was so great. It was so great.
Yeah.
Because... it didn't seem like Tony was being manipulative at all when he was legitimately indignant that she would call it playing the depression card.
Well, as rightfully so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, in that case, he's right and she's wrong. I mean, the part where, and then she goes on to talk about how he was so happy-go-lucky in high school, like, how could he have the nerve to become a more, you know, a more conflicted adult? And it's just like, honey, you know, and it's weird moments like that where, and I thought one of the really intriguing things that happened in the hour last night was, once again, they were doing that thing where Tony becomes far more sympathetic and, you're actually rooting for him to, say, knock somebody's teeth out.
Because oh, man.
The other guy turned out was even more reprehensible.
Oh, God.
And suddenly you're sitting there rooting, you know, sitting there like with your adrenaline coursing, watching him do a savage, savage beatdown.
I can't tell you. There's a little backstory in this. My wife, like a lot of women, I think, my wife finds, not James Gandolfini, but finds Tony Soprano incredibly arousing. She finds him really hot. I mean, I will tell you that. I mean, this is, look, maybe the thing I'm oversharing, but a lot of women I know feel the same way. They don't find James Gandolfini all that hot, but they find Tony Soprano very alluring. And it is because it's the power thing, you know, and not just the money, but it's the fact that he is such a... I mean, I hate the stereotype, but there, you know, there's a certain truism in some of those generalities about the sexes, and I think a lot of women are attracted to guys who can be very sort of protectively violent. And
or even proactively violent.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. But violent in the sense of, especially in the sense of what they perceive to be protection, and even proactively violent. Like Carmella has said that, you know, that she was attracted to him because he was like a bad boy, and he would just beat down people, you know, for no reason, and she found it really hot. And so there's this sequence last night, but you can see it, where seemingly out of nowhere, and so much that it almost just did seem like this sort of deus ex machina, where Meadow Soprano is in a restaurant, and a guy comes up and says something very crude to her, makes a very crude sexual come-on to Meadow Soprano.
So he makes it very clear he's talking to her because he knows she's Tony Soprano's kid.
And he gives a bunch of really vile sexual euphemisms to Meadow. And...
there's the scene at the dinner table where Carmela basically says to Meadow, tell your father what that horrible Coco man said to you. And Meadow repeats to Tony sort of a cleaned up version of what the guy said. And Tony, and he starts doing that breathing thing where he's just going.
Right.
And he says, what else did he say? Tell me everything he said. And Meadow tells Tony exactly what the guy said. And again, even just describing it now, your heart starts to race. And I got to tell you, last year, just like you said, my adrenaline starts flowing, and it is sort of weirdly exciting because you know what's coming. You know that Tony is about to go put the boot into somebody.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of that sequence in Goodfellas where Ray Liotta comes home and Lorraine Bracco said that the neighbor across the street got fresh with her.
Oh.
And there's that long tracking shot as Ray Liotta goes across the street and pistol whips the guy, which my wife described as like the hottest thing she had ever seen in her life.
Whoa. What a freaky chick, man.
It is true. And so last night, I mean, it was such a visceral thrill in this horrible way that Tony goes and just beats the guy to within an inch of his life.
Oh, man.
And you know the other weird thing? That is also, in a roundabout way, a visceral payoff for the fact that we never got to see Tony take it out on the guy who raped Dr. Melfi, which is one of the ways that David Chase has sort of denied us what we want as viewers.
Uh-huh.
We've never gotten to see Tony do that for her. And I think in a weird way last night, that was almost kind of scratching that itch a couple seasons late in a strange way. So anyway, that was just a great moment. Just a really, and Tony really does have just such great, weird, sympathetic moments, you know? So anyway.
Yeah, but then it's sort of the interesting thing to me is that it makes the viewer kind of complicit.
Totally.
For all that you're sitting around sort of clucking, you know, shaking your head and clucking your tongue about what a bunch of sociopaths these guys are, you know, when push comes to shove and you suddenly begin to feel you can share Tony's motivations, you're totally down with him, you know, knocking that guy's teeth all over the floor.
Absolutely. And the greatest moment is there's this moment when they're taking AJ to the shrink and they're trying to talk about AJ's problems and why he's so messed up, and Tony looks down and he realizes he's got one of the guy's bloody teeth caught on the pant leg of his trousers.
That was nearly as cool as the thrown away moment where they're talking, when Tony was telling the guys back at the Bada Bing about how he had done peyote in Las Vegas, and Paulie notes how he got dosed with acid in 1968 at a Jerry Vale concert.
Totally.
And now it looked like there were laser beams coming out of Uncle Junior's eyes.
And that when Tony's talking to Melfi, and he says, you know, why me? Why do these things happen to my kids? And Melfi says, why not you? And Tony's response is, because I'm a good guy.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, which is great because it's so ridiculous, but on the other hand, you can see how he views himself that way.
Well, who doesn't view themselves as a good guy?
I guess it's true. So do you have any predictions for anything major between now and the end of the series? Any thoughts about something that's going to happen?
I think obviously there's going to be some conflict between Brooklyn and New Jersey. I don't know exactly where that's going to lead. I mean, it could be like this existential thing where these badasses from, you know, across the Hudson just come in and blow everybody away. I mean, you know, and maybe they all just end up having to work for Phil. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I almost in some ways try not to play prognostication and just sort of sit back and let it unfold.
Do you know have you heard anything from whether Chase has ever entertained the idea of doing a feature film or any follow-up with this? Or do you know when this ends, is it the end?
Well, there was a vague spoiler in the New York Post or something via an interview with Steve Van Zandt, who said that if they do a movie, it's going to have to be a prequel because at the end of the TV series that there ain't nobody left standing. And I don't know, you know, I mean, he's not a dumb guy.
Yeah.
He may very well
be screwing with us.
Yeah.
All right, let's get, we have a phone call here. This is Kevin. You're on with Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. What's up?
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What do you got?
Hey, I got a question for Peter. Have you ever watched Dexter?
Dexter, the Showtime series Dexter.
Yeah, I saw the pilot and first episode, or the second episode, I think. I didn't do much for me. I know a lot of people like it, but there was something about that milieu or whatever that kind of, that just, serial killers don't do much for me. And in that context, it just kind of freaked me out, and I didn't want to go back and watch it anymore.
This is he's the serial killer that kills other serial killers.
Yeah, it's really meta.
The whole concept seems so cutesy to me. It just seems too quirky, you know?
And a lot of people really dig it, though, and so I can't. I don't mean any disrespect toward our friend Kevin or the other guys or the other people who really dig the show, but just for me, it was just like on a personal preference, millions of hours of TV to watch every week. That just wasn't one that I wanted to watch.
Yeah, we got a big email from everybody from the CBS brass instructing us to watch it because it's a CBS production, and telling us that it was like our job duty to watch it. So I did not.
You know, it's coming back, Peter.
Yeah, I believe it is coming back.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
All right, there you go. And Entourage continues to be brilliant. Just continue, in my opinion. That's a hard balloon to keep in the air, the sort of quirky, light, frothy comedy like that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as I've noted about a bunch of guys who really have no real problems.
But they're interesting dudes. I like it. I like the fact that it's, in some ways maybe it's just a fantasy or whatever, but, you know, for guys. But to me, it's interesting that they do get into a lot of serious relationship-type questions and male identity-type stuff.
It is. Well, it's kind of like Swingers in that sense. That it is sort of like male, I'll say male love, but it is, it is about the guy.
Man-on-man love. I know, you're into that.
it's about hot man-on-man action. It is a movie about how guys relate to and bond with and love each other. And even like the weird, there's been a lot of that between Ari and those guys this season. And it's just, you talk about a guy, though, who in the writing and acting, who threads that needle so carefully. Because think about how many ways in which Ari could just be so vile.
Yeah.
Just so hideous. And the fact that he is not is, is a testament to everybody on that show.
Well, what's brilliant, the brilliant decision they made is that for all that Ari is the savage, heartless, fearless Hollywood mother. On the other hand, he's terrified of his wife.
Right. And not in a sort of fake way either.
No. He loves her.
And they have made several allusions to the fact that he's also never been unfaithful to her.
Right.
Which is, and again, it's just, it is that sort of, bad guy with the heart of gold that can be really cliched, but in their hands works out really, really well. The other thing that Entourage does well, in my opinion, is that they set up new obstacles for those guys every season that don't feel faked or forced.
Right.
Like this year they've got whatever they got to buy and produce this Medellin show themselves or whatever. So.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that's great, there's a lot of underrated players on that show, and one of them is Kevin Dillon, who plays Johnny Drama.
Yeah.
Who he plays this poor kind of pathetic character with great self-respect,
Yeah, yeah.
And just his struggle to maintain his sense of self, even in the face of, having to live in his baby brother's deep, dark shadow.
And there's so many little throwaways on that show that tell you so much about Hollywood. There was this great moment where, he's talking about a motorcycle he used to have. He didn't have anymore. And he was like, well, I sold it to Michael Madsen after a rough pilot season. and that one line tells you what you need to know about Hollywood.
Yeah.
But there was a legitimately touching moment last week when, after all the struggle and heartbreak and failure and rejection, this program he's on, this Five Brothers or Five Towns or whatever it is, he hears that it got like 16 million. It was number one, 18 to 49. And he's drunk by the Grand Canyon, thinking he's a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment when he falls to his knees and he does that, victory!
Yeah.
It is legitimately touching. You feel good for the guy, even though he's just kind of an ass. So, Anred, anything good this week that we had to be paying attention to, or is it the usual swill?
Well, The Shield, of course.
Oh, yeah, I'm all over that.
I've seen the whole season now.
Not
to boast.
No, here's the thing is I shouldn't admit to this, and I have kept this from you. But I, using the interwebs, I also have seen the remainder of the season.
Oh.
I have looked at, here's the thing, because they air two episodes a week in France.
That's how much contempt they have for us.
I know. It's because they hate freedom.
Yeah.
And so I have viewed ahead, and so I will not discuss the end of the season because it hasn't aired yet here. But, boy, you know, that guy, Walter Goggins, who plays Shane, if he doesn't have a space already cleared for his Emmy, he ought to be doing it now because, I mean, that guy certainly is going to get nominated, I would think.
Walton Goggins?
Yeah, Walton
Goggins.
You know,
he's already won an Oscar.
Is that true? For what?
Directing a short film.
Oh, that's right, right. Yeah, you mentioned that. But, you know, the breakdown, the disintegration of Shane Vendrell has just been one of the great story arcs of our time.
He has zero discipline. No, and he kept the way he keeps switching sides on people.
He just has no internal tether, and he lacks Vic Mackey's sort of maybe corrupted but fixed internal barometer.
Yeah.
So let's talk more about how many episodes are there left in this season. There's tomorrow, and then what? Two more, I think.
Something like that. Yeah, I'm sort of out of touch with where the on air narrative is.
Because your fancy schmancy TV reviewing ass got to see the rest of them.
Yeah, like yours.
I had to work for those. I had to download all night to watch those. All right, Peter Carlin, read him in print in the Oregonian, online at OregonLive.com. Talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, bye.
There you go, Peter Carlin, ladies and gentlemen. God love him. All right, there you go. 503-733-2970. Back after this, a final visit to the Ministry of Truth. Like is at 3, Donna Mike at 7. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Radio program. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator. Please make way for the Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Now, these two guys tried to cut a trailer in half with a welding torch, and it blew up. It happened in Banks, which is probably the most exciting thing that's happened in that municipality in quite some time. The trailer at Northwest Cedar Canyon Road is nothing but a pile of cinders now. The two men whisked away. We have no idea what condition they're in, but probably not very good if the thing blew up. So that happened in Banks this afternoon. They'll try to cut a trailer in half. But you can probably use a hacksaw. That might be more helpful. Senator John McCain used a conference today to unleash his toughest and most personal attack yet on former Governor Mitt Romney. Apparently, let's see here. Maybe I should wait a couple of weeks and see if it changes, because it's changed a lot less in this year than the position before. He's talking about his position on illegal aliens. And maybe the situation will be to get out his small varmint gun and drive those Guatemalans off his lawn.
His small vomit gun?
Varmint.
Oh, sorry. I like the idea of a vomit gun more.
I do, too.
Okay.
McCain's reference to Guatemalans was an allusion to a Boston Globe story last year that reported that Mitt Romney used illegal aliens to do his lawn work.
I'm shocked.
Meanwhile, let's talk about older women, shall we? Women turning 50 feel much better than their mothers did at this milestone. Dr. Danica Moore talks about being 50, nifty, and feeling fine.
They've rediscovered this new energy, this new concentration on their own interests and activities.
Yeah, 50 is the new 30. Blah, 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 blah.
Yes, it's not the end. It's the beginning of the third act. That's what she said.
They've rediscovered this new energy, this new concentration on their own interests and activities.
I think that's the same soundbite twice in a row.
That's what happens when you turn 50.
I was just going to say, with age. All right. Well, whatever.
Being chased by a police conker for an hour ended up being behind bars for a fellow. This because he stole cigarettes. Ryan Walker of Portage, Indiana, ripped off a carton of Newports from the Town and Country Market last Thursday, and it led to a chase. He ran from the store, but they caught him in a wooded area. Things got a little sticky. Police dogs joined in the search as an Indiana State helicopter hovered over him after he stole these cigarettes and eventually closed in on him, and then they let the dogs loose. One officer broke his hand during the ordeal, but he was booked into the Porter County Jail, and the carton of cigarettes was recovered intact. Further details are emerging regarding former Creed frontman Scott Stapp's weekend arrest for domestic violence.
I heard about it. So
he's such a terrible little evil man.
Ass. Is he in jail now?
Let me see here. It doesn't say. The Florida attorney now has 30 days to officially charge him with something.
So I haven't heard. So tell me the story, because I haven't heard the story.
Well, once upon a time, the former Miss New York, his wife, Jacqueline Neshawat,
claims that Strat became very angry with her at Sunday morning when she asked him if he was using drugs. She said Strat then told her to leave him alone before allegedly throwing a glass bottle in her face.
Leave me alone.
Nesha Watts said she wasn't hurt, but the injury caused her to fear for her life.
Strat
was arrested on suspicion of domestic assault with intent to commit a felony. The booking charge has since been lowered to a misdemeanor because this happened in Florida, I guess. The Florida State Attorney General now has 30 days to officially charge him. Stapp and Nesha Watts married last February and have a young daughter together. He also has a son from a previous marriage. Stapp was arrested the day after their wedding in Los Angeles for alleged public drunkenness. No charges were filed there because he's a celebrity.
He's a real prize. What is it? And the rest of those guys... Thanks so much. The rest of those guys from Creed formed a band that's basically everybody but him. And if you see, I don't think it's the Behind the Music for Creed. I think it was actually an interview I read with the guitarist for Creed. Because, again, their new band is called blah, 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 whatever. But it's like everybody but him. And they just hate him. Those guys that were in Creed.
He seems like such an ass.
Oh, he seems like the biggest a-hole. And they put it squarely on him for becoming the most hated band in the world. They're like, you know, we went from selling millions of records to being the most despised band in the universe. And they put it all on that guy.
Well, he totally has a Jesus complex. He's one of those bands where they pretend to be all about Jesus, but really he just totally thinks he's just some kind of...
Well, it's the guys in Limp Bizkit feel the same way, you know, because that band went from being really famous to being despised, and it's all because of Fred Durst. Fantastic.
Paula Abdul has broken her nose.
Excellent.
It's attributed to one of her pets. Her rep says, quote, and well, you know it's a lie, she tripped to avoid stepping on Tulip, one of her chihuahuas.
She fell into a door.
A spokesman, Abdul was not hospitalized and is expected to appear on Tuesday and Wednesday's finale of American Idol with a broken nose.
Oh, that's great. Fantastic. Because you know that there was... You know that that's not the real story. You don't know there's some other cause there. Let's do one more and then we'll break here.
I don't think there is one more.
Oh, well, okay then. We're done. Ladies and gentlemen, world's greatest newsman, Tim Riley. He'll be back at 4, 5, 6, and 7. Top of the hour all the way through the Tom Likas radio program. let me just read a couple emails here, then we'll come back. Rick, you were talking about gasoline being 98 pence. 98. Oh, I didn't know this. 98 pence is $2 U.S. A liter is 0.2 gallons, so a gallon of gas in England is $9.65. That's another reason why Americans should just shut their holes. $9.65 a gallon in Britain. I mean, I understand it's expensive and all, but really, honestly, come on. Let's see. What else do we have here? Rick, about exercise balls. Those are some big balls. They're a couple feet high. They make you balance when you're doing crunches. Personally, I hate them. However, attention, Sarah.
I'm listening.
Exercise balls are highly praised by some women who give birth. They bounce on it a lot prior to labor, weeks before, for muscle conditioning to help strengthen and stretch the most intimate of muscles. It is supposed to make those pesky intimate muscles more flexible.
I don't know what kind of exercises those people are doing. I'm planning on doing crunches.
I'm just reading now. You're ignoring this medical advice.
Okay, I'm listening. I'm sorry.
This is from a woman. The exercise ball is supposed to make those pesky intimate muscles more flexible and able to push out a huge screaming thing without giving you a new set of French doors.
Oh, Jesus, God.
Signed, childbirth. Yeah. All right. Let's see. Rick.
So people are fans of the exercise balls.
No, well, somebody somewhere. I guess. I don't really understand what they're for. This guy.
I've already committed to purchasing one. My friend and I are going to buy it.
Of course you have. All right. Did they label it organic?
I don't know.
That's the other way.
I'll see how much it is. If it's too much, I'll just, snag Lars from you.
All right. Yeah, no, there's one sitting in the basement somewhere. It's been sitting.
You can never find anything in your basement.
No, that's not true. We've cleaned the basement. The basement has... You haven't seen the basement in a long time.
I haven't been to your house in a long time.
No, true. The basement is... We've renovated it entirely.
Oh, but you know what? We can catch up tomorrow at my Chemical Romance, Rick Emerson.
At Rick's Chemical Romance?
Don't say that.
All right. Oh, did we ever figure out who was opening?
Yeah.
Let me just... Do we
have haven't heard them. But...
Yeah, what are they called? Because it wasn't Muse. Because Muse was... This is the thing. Muse, who was apparently pretty good, they're the opening act like everywhere else in the world for My Chemical Romance. But here it's not. It's some band called...
It's called The Bled, and I was talking to Raul about them, and I guess he likes them. He's like, they're a little more hardcore, but I haven't had a chance to listen to them yet.
We have... This is...
I found their MySpace page.
This is the band opening for My Chemical Romance tomorrow at Memorial Coliseum.
All right, let me make sure that... All my other windows are closed.
All right. So
this computer's freezing.
My Chemical Romance, which I'm not sure if it's sold out or not. Somebody asked me if it was, and I don't really know the answer to that. Because sometimes, okay, you know, there's an opening act that you want to go see, and sometimes there's an opening act that you feel like you can just miss.
Okay, let's see.
This is The Bled.
What?
No, we don't need... Is this a joke?
Are you kidding?
Are you sure that this is a band opening for My Chemical?
Okay. It says they're playing in Portland tomorrow.
Well, this is good. It means I don't have to be there till 9.
So you can go get a couple beers beforehand.
Yeah, let's go get loaded up. If you and I go get loaded up in the beer garden, how could that go wrong? Instead of seeing this, why don't we never see this band? That's my idea. This sounds just like that Lamb of God band that the kids are all in.
Oh, yeah, the kids.
And see, here's the thing. I don't know whether this makes me old, because I used to be down with the metal. I used to be down with the kids and their extreme music.
They're classifying themselves as indie rock.
See, so when I... See, so when I hear bands like this, I don't...
They're sponsored by Verizon Wireless.
Really? Maybe that's make this my new ringtone. I don't really understand whether... Maybe this means I'm not a real metal fan, or maybe I was never a real metal fan, or maybe I'm just too old to appreciate what the kids are listening to.
But I'm a lot younger than you, and I don't get it.
Yeah, you're a girl, though.
That's true. Raul does like a lot of music like this.
This is like, see, it's like Lamb of God. Lamb of God is coming to town. Did you ever have a band that you hate come to town with a band that you love? And then you don't want to... I guess that's true. I guess there's tomorrow. I didn't pay for those tickets, though. I got those for free.
I know. Thank you so much.
Lamb of God is who I despise. Lamb of God is coming to... There's this band called Hatebreed that I'm kind of into. And then there's Lamb of God. But Lamb of God, who sounds just like this. They sound just like this. They're awful. And they're the headliner. And so there's the question of, do I want to pay $17 to see an opening act that I really like, even though I'll have to leave after 45 minutes? All right, let's never listen to this again.
I'll just take a break. We've got a break.
Let's make this Peter Carlin's new intro music. Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show. You stay right there. Like my dad when I make comments like that. That's the thing. Like, you know that girl Alicia that works over the coin tower that we used to work with?
Yes.
Big Lamb of God fan. And I remember she was trying to talk to me about it one day, and I so desperately wanted to look hip because she came in and she's like, so are you a big Lamb of God fan? Are you into those guys? They're coming to town. A bunch of us are going to see, and and it's like, I don't want to sound uncool. I don't want to seem old.
I don't mean to keep bringing up, yeah, like Raul, like I was talking, it's like, oh, the Bled's opening? That's awesome, because he's not a big fan of My Chemical Romance, but
I hate to sound like everybody's grandparent.
You do.
But why do they even bother to write lyrics for those songs? I mean, no, seriously.
Are you saying that?
Go back, play it again. Play this, The Bled.
Okay, I'll
again.
Play the song. This one is called...
And I saw you roll your eyes when I said that I was a Hatebreed fan, and I really do like those guys. But there's no way that I can pay $15 to see an opening act when the headliner is somebody that sounds like this.
This one's called...
It seems cool. It deceives you here because you think like it's going to be real music. You kind of go, well, this is okay. I can get into this. All right. I'm feeling the metal. I think this might be great. And then... No. Why would you write lyrics to this? What is the point?
Oh, man.
I mean, I guess I'm just old and out of touch.
It's called His First Crush. Are you getting that?
It sounds like a first crush song. It sounds up. It's right up there with, and then he kissed me. All right. Do you want to read some of the lyrics? Can you turn this off?
I think I lost some of those.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's like, you know, it's like I used to have friends of mine who were really into death metal, like Cannibal Corpse and whatnot. And I mean, I know these jokes have been made a billion times, but I mean, it really is true that all of those, like, grindcore bands and whatnot, it's like they all have the same goddamn...
I have a brilliant idea.
It's like, what is the point?
We should do the metal contest tomorrow, and we should take lyrics from this band and then lyrics that Scotty J. had writes.
Fantastic.
Because I've read some of these lyrics, and they're
Do you have some of them? Do you have, like, some sample lyrics from whatever it is?
Yes.
From The Bled?
From The Bled.
All right. Pleased to be playing now. By the way, this is the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. We got Like Us next. Do we even have time?
No, we're going for now.
Okay. All right. Hey, we didn't get the Scotty J. Top 5 tune-out songs. We'll do that tomorrow. It's already prepared, so we'll do that tomorrow. Thank you, Scotty, for putting it together. All right. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah Exilin for AM 970 Solid State Radio in the newsroom. Tim Riley, our PA is Scotty J. The gatekeeper is Dave Zinn. We want to thank CNN radio correspondents Amanda Moyer and Lisa Goddard today. Joining us tomorrow on the Rick Emerson Show, Cross Country Nate and Dennis Pitzenbarger. Let's see, what do we got? Like Us next, Donna Mike at 7, Stephanie Miller tomorrow live from 6 to 8, Dennis Miller 8 to 11. We will see you tomorrow morning at 11. Till then, be safe. Thank you for listening. Don't let the bastards grind you down, and please do try to help the retarded. I raised $29 for the Special Olympics today. What did you do? I'm Rick Emerson. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Come on, Jim.